show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and hey, welcome to this Friday on the front porch, right here on the Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid, and hey, it's Friday on the front porch, and we can actually use the front porch for the first time in a long time. The typical false spring has found its way to the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. It's been a little bit rainy today, but I heard a robin. I heard a robin's call, and it worries me a little bit because a little bugger's going to freeze his tail feathers off because this is a false spring in every sense of the word. But my God, it's warm and toasty outside. Simply lovely for a Friday evening on the front porch conversation. So welcome to it. And just a couple of comments to get things going. Two things. One, if you did not get a chance to listen live to Dar Jamal and his Seneca 2 lecture last night, which we provided live on the Horn in both audio and video stream, do not waste any time about downloading that podcast or listen to the archive. It'll hit sometime this weekend. It's a must hear. If ever there are two stories out there, this is one of them. Three, really. But when you consider what the for-profit media are not covering, you come to a sort of inescapable realization of what a honking failure the for-profit media are. It doesn't matter which particular incarnation of the for-profit media we're talking about. They are all a failure. Because if you know, they parachuted in Anderson Cooper, CNN did, and the last I checked, remember that wonderful night when he was broadcasting live from the BP disaster, talking about, bear with me, there's a lot of noise in the background. That's that Calliope music. Remember Anderson Cooper and his Calliope music? Yeah, me too. Well, that's about as good as it gets with the for-profit media. And as far as the for-profit media are concerned, there is no more BP story. There is no more BP disaster. It's all over with. It's done. No big deal. Right? Yeah. Not really. Because if you were listening for that hour and a half last night, if you were listening to Dar Jamal as he documented chapter and verse what is still going on down in the Gulf region, the manifest sickness, the illness, the perfectly healthy 20-something fellow who was getting ready to go into the Marines, who went swimming one day and was bathed in poison, and whose doctor looked at him and said, "It's amazing that you're alive, and you're probably only alive because you're strong and in your 20s. If you were listening to that, you understand what it is that you understand what a failure, what a falling off the for-profit media are. Yeah. And that's what makes this little effort right here and other efforts similar so very important, in my humble opinion and that of many other people who share a
a regard for the horn and for independent, unencumbered media in general. The other story, out of three, being, of course, what's going on in Wisconsin. How big does a story need to be before the for-profit media decide that it is one? I guess they really couldn't avoid at least parachuting in for the BP disaster. And you remember how they camped out for days on end during the Upper Big Branch disaster last April here in West Virginia. Packed up and moved on as soon as they figured out that there weren't going to be if it bleeds, it leads pictures of bodies being dragged out of that godforsaken massy hole. You know, you gotta go when it blows up. You're just not for-profit media if you don't go and hope you get some blood and gore and guts and veins in your teeth and that kind of stuff. But follow up. Actually doing the hard business of news? No, the for-profit media are worth nothing where that is concerned. And so it is that we see that there is little to no coverage of what's going on in Wisconsin. A little bit on MSNBC, apart from that, not so much. Fox deigns to talk about it only in as to advance their claim, their idiocy, that it's, what is it? It's a communist plot. That it's something that's designed solely to advance socialism in America so they can get the teabaggers, I guess, all whooped up. Caroli over at Crooks and Liars noting that Fox Radio Rwanda claims that the protests are all about 2012. This is nothing more than one great big campaign commercial for the fascist-Lamunist Kenyan Muslim in the White House. Caroli noting that Megyn Kelly, one of the attack blondes on Radio Rwanda, was shocked that Wisconsin Democrats would dare leave the state in order to delay the vote on Governor Walker's union buster bill. Can we take a moment? Can we take a moment just to offer a little bit of, I don't know, psychic energy or whatever it is that we do? To offer just a little bit of regard? A little bit of respect for those Democrats in Wisconsin who did walk out so as to protect the livelihoods and lives of that state's public workers? Can we do that? I think it's important that we do. Because, frankly, as Rachel Maddow noted, what's going on in Wisconsin is actually the question as to whether or not there will be a Democratic Party. Because that's the Democratic Party at work in Wisconsin. Make no mistake about it. No, it's not the Democratic Party that Barack Obama knows. It's not the Democratic Party that Tim Kaine goes out and fundraises for. In Wisconsin, those are the people who knock on doors, put signs in their yards, and work tirelessly to get people elected. And while Barack Obama has at least made some of the right noises about what's going on in Wisconsin, it's not the kind of strong statement you'd like. Yesterday, he did accuse Scott Walker, Scott Hosni Mubarak Walker, of unleashing an assault on unions and pushing emergency legislation that would nullify collective bargaining agreements. and the president's what's being called political machine is working to coordinate with state and national union officials to mobilize thousands of protesters. That's getting it right now. However, there is so much more that needs to be done. I'm still pissed off. I'm still pissed off about the Employee Free Choice Act. But all of that aside, it's worth noting that just as the horn last night brought you information you would not have otherwise had about what is going on in the Gulf, and brought it to you from the very lips of the individual who has done the investigative journalism on the ground in the form of Dar Jamal. What a great journalist he is. You know, it took a lot of guts to do what he did during the Iraq War, during George Bush's war against the people of Iraq. Took a lot of guts. He was unembedded. He was one of the people that reported things that other than what the military wanted reported. And that takes guts like we can scarcely conceive. But you had the story of the Gulf last night directly from Dar Jamal. And if you were watching the video, and if you haven't, I encourage you to, just look up The Horn, Head On with Bob Kincaid on Ustream, and you'll find the recording there, and you can watch it at your leisure. He backed it up with photographic evidence. And that's the one place where radio is simply not much help. But when he talked about people, you saw the people he was talking about. And more importantly, you saw the current state of affairs in the Gulf region. And it ain't good. But the second story is, of course, Wisconsin, and it is the biggest story in the country today, and it is barely being covered. Because the owners of the for-profit media don't want it covered. Simply put. You don't want to show the solidarity of working people. You don't want to show America that they can get out of their chairs, that the sleeper can awaken, and that they can break themselves out of their self-imposed, entertained-to-death slumber and go out and make a difference. Do you think that Scott Walker is not having a little bit of a hissy fit right now? He's counting on people going home and getting tired of protesting, but no, he's crossed a line. In Wisconsin, a line has been crossed. Because this isn't something, and I mean no disrespect, please, no hate mail. But this isn't something as esoteric as ending a war 8,000 miles away. This is people with their feet on the street because it's their butts in the ringer now. And they are the ones being put at hazard by this devoutly to be wished policy of Republicans for generations in the form of Scott Walker's union busting dream. And the idea that the American people would see that scares the oligarchy half silly. That is why, among other things, the Koch brothers, via the Club for Growth, the Koch brothers are funding a pro-Walker protest. I'd be surprised by this, except we've got here in the hills of Appalachia rather long experience with pro-coal protests, where no amount of money is spared in order to bring busloads of coal thugs to peaceful rallies to threaten and intimidate peaceful citizens demanding little more than the right to be left alone, the right not to be poisoned, the right not to be swept away in the surging sea of sludge that will come from a broken sludge dam someday. Not maybe, not if, but when. The Koch brothers have organized or are orchestrating a pro-Scott Walker protest. This is getting more Egyptian by the moment, isn't it? Can you just see the Koch brothers up in their ivory tower, glass tower office, looking at each other? Where are we going to get camels? We need some camels. And how do camels handle snow? Can we get some camels to run through those heathen socialist leftist Demist fascist Leninist Kenyan Muslim supporters in Madison? We need camels. Call Egypt. See if we can get some camels. Those guys look great. We need some pro Scott Walker camel riders going through and whipping the snot out of all them liberals. Really. It's like Brad Friedman said a couple of nights ago. It's not that they can't argue. The right wing can't even tolerate the idea of us having a counter argument. They're going to whip up a bunch of right wing thugs and bust them in to try to intimidate people who may very well not be intimidatable. Because this is reality now. The hogs are out of the tunnel. And everybody who's actually paying attention knows that Wisconsin is an opening salvo. And I hate the eliminationist language. I hate it. I'm sorry. An opening gambit, shall we say? It isn't in Wisconsin by coincidence. It's in Wisconsin because if you can break public employees in Wisconsin, you can break them all over the country. And if you have broken public employees all over the country, you have just managed to break every other labor organization in this nation. The very essence of the struggle for basic human dignity in this country is happening in Wisconsin, in Madison, at the Capitol there. That's how important this is. Because labor rights have been something that's been part of the fabric of Wisconsin culture for literally generations now. And if you can break it in Wisconsin, you can break it anywhere. It's kind of like a sad and sordid lyric to New York, New York, isn't it? I know if I can break it there, I'll break it anywhere. It's up to you, Madison, Wisconsin. It's up to you, cheeseheads. But here's the good news. Well, some of the good news, more good news. I just had a phone conversation with Rick Smith, my colleague from the Rick Smith Show here on the Horn. Rick will be traveling to Wisconsin tomorrow. He will be there all day Sunday. He will be there all day Monday. He's taking his gig rig with him. He will be broadcasting live from Wisconsin Monday night. He will also be reporting from Wisconsin on this program Monday. God, how I would love to be with him. I kid you not. who knew a place as prosaic, as lovely a place as Madison, Wisconsin? And it is a lovely place. Would wind up being our Cairo. Anybody, did anybody think it would be Madison, Wisconsin? Pick almost anywhere else. But no, it's pastoral, lovely, prosaic, Madison, Wisconsin. And I hope people are traveling there. I wish I had the wherewithal to travel there. Because I would rent a car and I would go. But Rick will be there, and Rick will be plenty. So you want to be listening in for certain, for sure, Monday night. You want to be listening for Rick's appearance on this show, and you want to be listening to Rick Smith live from Wisconsin Monday evening. I have a feeling you're going to hear things that you will not hear. You simply will not hear. If you're not listening to the horn, you just won't. You will not. You will not. It is Friday on the front porch, and for that reason, let's quit shilly-shallying about. You know the phone number, by the way. Jump right in. It's Friday on the front porch, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4. Head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Maura.
How are you, Bob?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Very good. I just called to say how proud I am of the people out in Wisconsin. They're amazing.
Aren't they?
They really are. But I got a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
I've never worked in the type of job where there was union representation. So my knowledge about how unions work is small by comparison to what you folks know. Why haven't the unions all across the country gotten their union reps to get people out in the streets to support the people in Wisconsin?
I would suggest, I'm no labor lawyer, Maura, but I would suggest that a part of that has to do with a hateful, miserable, piece of right-wing legislation that has tormented working people for generations now called Taft-Hartley.
Well, no, I'm not saying to actually walk off their jobs in other states, but on their off time to have rallies.
I don't know that. I suspect that even the mere fear of Taft-Hartley would probably slow people down. And
I mean, I'm just trying to understand it, because I would have thought that union people all across the country would want to show their support.
Oh, I think so too, and I don't. I frankly don't have an answer.
I'm not being mean about it.
No. I think there should be informational or just support pickets, but.
Right.
But by the same token, Maura, just to give you an example.
Yeah.
Back when I was on terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, a group of nurses at Appalachian Regional Hospital who were on their own time.
Right.
Who were not in any way impeding anyone's access to the hospital, set up an informational picket. They were fired.
Ooh.
And that was done because labor lawyers feel like that they've got the right to do so because of the strictures that exist within Taft-Hartley. Taft-Hartley is a very hateful piece of legislation.
Right. Well, that might very well have something to do with it.
And of course, it might be also a matter of, and I hate this phrase, of keeping powder dry in case it spreads to. Because other right-wing governors have similar ideas.
Oh, look where I live, New Jersey.
Sure. You've got New Jersey. You've got that freak Kasich, you know, Kasich, whatever, in Ohio. You've got that unindicted co-conspirator, Rick Scott, in Florida.
Absolutely.
And every one of them have at the top of their agenda, Maura, this item that says kill all unions.
Well, that's always been part of the GOP platform.
Absolutely. Because people standing up for themselves, people banding together and organizing and such like, that's bad Republican politics, because all Republican politics is predicated upon the desperation of working people.
Right.
So that's my only guess. But moreover, Maura, the other thing is, why are the, and maybe I've already answered the question, why are the for-profit media not covering it themselves?
Well, you're 100% right. Even the New York Times isn't doing much of a job on it.
No, I check out the New York Times online every day. There's not a lot in there.
Very little.
It's mostly the alternative media that's covering this.
Right. Well, I thank you for your time, Bob.
Oh, well, thank you, Maura. It's always a joy to hear from you.
Quick question. How's the fundraising?
We actually made it to the halfway point for February.
Okay.
And now here at the end of the third week of February, we're trying to catch up on the second half. So,
right,
you know, it's slow, but it's happening.
Great. Have a good evening and a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Maura. You too. Bye now. From New Jersey, that is Maura, and Maura has been listening to us, been part of the Horn family for just about as long as there's been a Horn family. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that you, Bob?
It is Bob. Who is this?
This is Clayton, man.
Oh, hey, Clayton.
Here in Ohio, I'm really amazed. I keep hearing about there's going to be demonstrations downtown, because we have Kasich, as you know. And he's a bit of a little twerp.
Oh, he's a thug.
Oh, yeah. A small thug, though. He doesn't know how to be a big thug. But he came out yesterday midday and made himself unpopular again by he got a ticket for speeding.
Oh, I heard about that, where he called the officer who gave him the ticket, what was this, a couple of years ago, called him an idiot three times or so?
Yep. So this idiot, this idiot. And they got him on film on it, and, you know, that's going to, you know, cops don't like to be talked to like that, you know?
You know, I make it a point not to do that.
Me too. You know, you or I get our heads clubbed in, you know?
Right.
But anyway, he's going to make a lot of enemies. See, during his first month of office, the local press really got ticked off at him. And people that elected him, and I don't mean the local press, and I don't mean the people that elected him, and I don't mean the Koch family, I mean the Wolf family. They're the ones that paid for him to be in there.
Right.
They paid for all of our people here in Ohio. And he promised to be transparent. Well, that's the first time I've ever heard a Republican ever be transparent. But
well, he's a transparent grifter.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. And he's not going to be that now, and they're ticked off at him. And he was written up in the Dispatch. And that's the only time they've written him up, is when he's gotten down on the cop and with the transparency issue. And I don't expect it to go too far, but the point that I was going to make was that here in the middle of middle class Columbus, Ohio, we have three stations, all of them owned by a couple of families. Just like the rest of the world, right?
Sure.
And they control the media, they control the newspapers, everything that's here. That's why I listen to you, man. Between you and Democracy Now, that's where I get my truth. Well, I'm sorry, I have to remember Malloy.
Yeah. Yeah, and facts. Those are big things, facts. Because
yeah,
because when you've got Fox News, Radio Rwanda out there with fonts that say Wisconsin is burning, you know, facts are out the window.
Exactly. The interesting thing about this whole thing is I was involved back in the early 70s with bringing the unions into Columbus or into the state. And the reason we did that, and people don't understand this, is, you know, I worked in the mines, and I know what it was like there. Well, the state, you wore a white shirt, but it was the mines. You could work as many hours as they wanted you to. The big thing for most of us was that, and remember, this was a Democratic administration with, what was that guy's name? He owned, his family owned a funeral parlor down in Cincinnati, and he hired all the Italian mafia, we referred to them as, from Cleveland to come down here and control everything. And they would tell you, you know, if you don't do what we say, you'll never work again in the state of Ohio. I saw them make grown men cry. If you didn't get out and work on the weekends for the Democratic ticket or the Republican ticket, you wouldn't be around too long. You'd disappear. And they did encourage us to create the union thing. That's probably because their friends were controlling the unions. I don't know that for sure, but I suspect it, you know. They've cleaned their act up a lot because they haven't had that much in power for the last 30 years. You know, they've been out of power a lot. They've had a couple of sort of leaning left Democrats, but more leaning left into their own pockets rather than an organized movement. But I find that to be an interesting thing, that these people, if they don't get out there and fight for it, they're going to lose here in Ohio and New Jersey and all the other states, and they're going to lose it in Wisconsin unless they continue.
Well, the stakes are monumental, and that's what I was getting at a little bit ago in saying that there's nothing esoteric about this. This is people's actual fat in the fire, so to speak.
Noam Chomsky commented today. I don't remember whether it was on Raw Story or one of those. And this is the beginning of the American revolt. And I hope so. I hope so because, you know, me and my guide dog, we're going to be out there running up and down the streets with the rest of it, getting out of the... I just hate to get my dog in all that damned tear gas. And the beautiful thing is that they're still doing it in Egypt and the other countries around Egypt and Iran, even though they're being killed in the streets. And you have to admire those people being peaceful, letting themselves be killed for their beliefs. And you know, I didn't know whether we still had it here in this country, but I'm beginning to see what I like. You know, we need another Martin Luther King and things like that. One of the things that's sort of confusing me, and this is one of their ways of throwing out lies to really confuse us and maybe know the answer, is that the jerks are saying that something about $13 billion or $140 million, they keep coming up with different numbers, and this is what confuses people, and especially if it's the only thing you hear. I think MSNBC is the only one carrying anything. The rest of them are blank. But how much money is involved in this thing? I know they were supposed to come out with a surplus at the end of 2011. And if that's true, what happened? And nobody explains that part of it. And that needs to be put out there. You know, the facts have a truth of their own, and that'll scare the hell out of them if the facts are thrown out at them about this.
And yet, look who it is that Koch Industries are bussing into Madison. You know, the usual suspects. There was some talk when I was talking with Brad Friedman a couple of nights ago about having, hopefully, slowly but surely, having the teabaggers wake up.
Yep.
Guess who's getting bussed into Madison?
Who's that?
Teabaggers.
Oh, just teabaggers. Yeah, okay. I can believe that.
You know, the shock troops of the oligarchs.
Well, what I'm going to regret is if they bring in some thugs of their own and start some violence.
Well, the teabaggers are thugs.
It depends on where you're at. There's different groups of teabaggers. Some of them are actually coming.
Well, these are funded by Koch Industries and therefore are not, I assure you, the friendly Mr. Rogers teabaggers.
Yeah.
They will be on a bus, and they will be whipped into a frenzy all the way to Madison.
And
because it's Americans for Prosperity.
Oh, okay.
And in case you... Yeah. And remember, Coke Industries, that's a, you know, it's sort of a catch-all term. But, you know, anywhere you find thuggery, coal is not far behind, Clayton, because Coke Industries owns coal company subsidiaries that have facilities in Green Bay, Ashland, Sheboygan, and Manitowoc, or however it is that I'm mispronouncing it.
But
wherever you find right-wing thuggery, the coal industry is not far behind.
One of the things I think would be a good thing is if there were a law to, you're only allowed to have so much wealth, period. You know, I don't know how much that would be, but some of these people are too powerful, way too powerful. And the amount of money that they own and how much of wealth as opposed to income is two different things, you know.
Sure.
And their wealth is extremely high, and their income might be low. And how much they get and how much they get to keep is just amazing. And the fact that they don't pay taxes on it, too, just makes me really angry. Anyway, keep it up, man. Appreciate your good work. And the check's in the mail.
All right. Thank you, Clayton. I appreciate it.
And by the way, everybody else out there, kick in. You know, I'm retired and have my Social Security. My guide dog makes a contribution every month when we can. And, you know, let's see if you can keep up.
And by the way, what's the guide dog's name?
Bullet.
Bullet, okay.
Yep. I was going to call him Sab Cat, but he wouldn't live with that. You know what a Sab Cat is, don't you?
No.
IWW. Industrial Workers of the World.
Oh, sure, the Wobblies.
Yeah, and they have a symbol that is a cat with its tail up in the air and in a circle, and it's called Sab Cat, meaning saboteur cat.
Ah, okay. Okay.
All right. Hey, guy, you have a good evening. Keep it up.
Well, thank you, Clayton.
I want to hear what Sandra has to say tonight.
All right. You take care, Clayton. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, man.
Bye now. And there's the conjuring of Sandra for this evening. Let's move forward. Lines open, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And we go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Jim. How about you?
Just looking at MSNBC. The governor of Wisconsin drew his line in the sand. So he is apparently recalcitrant and has no intentions of giving one millimeter.
What was the line in the sand as he drew it?
Basically, he was saying, we're broke, we don't have any money. That's what he's saying.
And do you believe that?
Well,
when a Republican tells you he's broke and doesn't have any money, what that usually means is, I don't have any money for you.
They have money for themselves, but not necessarily for the people who are trying to stand up for the right of collective bargaining and things of this nature.
Right, because there's been plenty of money in Wisconsin for tax giveaways. For, among other things,
this guy,
Coke Industries,
he has just gone beyond the limit to cut his own revenue stream by giving away these tax things and things of that nature. And no wonder he says they're broke, because basically the revenue stream that would come in from the taxes and things like that they could get from these industries, he's allowed them to diminish the state treasury.
Yeah, it's classic reverse Robin Hood, isn't it?
I think that's probably a very simplistic way of looking at
take
it.
Take from the poor and give to the rich?
Well, exactly. Reverse Robin Hoodism. And he's a big sheriff of Sherwood Forest. But you know what I see this is, number one. This is an attack upon all public servants, whether federal, civil service, or whatever, you know?
Right, and that's precisely why I said that this is happening in Wisconsin for a reason.
Exactly. Number one, it's going to basically what is driving it is to drive the public schools out of business. Number two, to drive labor out of business completely. I mean, but you got to look at it this way, and I'm just speaking off the cuff here without any prepared agenda. So,
sure,
bear with me. How many? What percentage of the total workforce in this country is union?
Less than 10%.
Well, that does not augur well for what's happening up there.
No, there's a reason that up until the Clinton administration, of course, there's a reason that the period of greatest prosperity in this country coincided with the highest degree of union membership. And what? The highest degree of union membership in this country was maybe 40% during the Eisenhower administration?
I don't know. I'll have to accept your word on that, probably.
It certainly wasn't 50.
No, but there have been movements to get to unions before. I mean, Kennedy, did he not have to invoke the Taft-Hartley against the steel workers?
Well, and there was Truman as well.
Exactly.
And that was with the UMWA.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, these people have presidents which they can operate. And I wish the people of Wisconsin well and the other states that are having problems. But, you know, the whole thing is money. And if they would only tax people in according to their means to pay the rich and to pay their fair share, I don't think we'd be having these problems. Now, maybe I'm being overly simplistic in this, but I see the fact that you have a very wealthy class not paying their fair share. Therefore, revenue stream is diminished considerably to the point that they're having to try to balance their budgets on the backs of the poor, and not where it should be, equally on the backs of the rich.
That's well, and what we're looking at today is the product of a generation's worth of agitation, Jim, in which the idea that you just enumerated, i.e., the idea of progressive taxation, is held out as some form of wage slavery. For the rich, some form of robbery. You know, the trailer for part one. Can you imagine that it's going to take more than two parts, like Lord of the Rings or something? Part one of Atlas Shrugged is coming out, and this thing just looks like a dreadful film. But it preaches this BS that taxation is the equivalent of theft.
Well, you ask any rich person or any person about taxation, and the power to tax is the power to destroy. And that's what they are viewing this as. And they're using that shibboleth as some type of means to galvanize people into saying, look, you've got this dictatorship that is trying to take away your hard-earned money. When they don't realize that that progressive taxation and the revenue stream that it produces enables this country to function. It enables public services to function. It enables public schools to stay open. It enables programs such as Medicare, Social Security, and every other thing that makes this country a humane place in which to live. It puts it all by the board. And that's what they're trying to do. And here again, it goes back to wealth distribution. and they're trying to polarize it into making most of the money go into the hands of a very few. And, you know, when Obama pulled this deal about the taxation business, about not making the rich pay their fair share, that was just the beginning of it. But the beginning of it started back in the 1980s with Ronald Reagan, with Patco, things of that nature.
Right.
And, of course, the fact that he would use the federal government to bring these people either back on the job or fire them. But, you know, Bob, they can't fire everybody. They can't do, I mean, how long do you think that the people in this country are going to allow economic bullets to be fired at them?
That's the million-dollar question in this whole scenario, Jim, is how much will the American people tolerate?
And, you know, here's the thing. The American people are now looking at television all over the world in the Middle East, and we're seeing the Middle East beginning to disintegrate as far as the existing regimes that were there before. It started in Tunisia. It's now in Mubarak. It's now in other countries as well.
Oh, God help the government of Bahrain if the people ever actually do succeed, because after that slaughter, I imagine that there will be no mercy.
And you look at Libya with Gaddafi. I mean, we're just jumping around here. I mean, talk about a dictator. I mean, this guy rules solely by his own hand. He makes agencies come and go at his own will. And, of course, he made a sweetheart deal with us because he knew it would be his ass if he didn't, because we would do to him what we did to Saddam Hussein. But he still is allowed to remain in power, and I would dare say he probably will allow to be remain in power. It'll be a police state all over again. I mean, Muammar Gaddafi is not known for his kind and gentle hand.
No, that's how he's managed to stay in office since 1969.
Exactly. And he's probably going to stay in power until he dies or until somebody assassinates him.
I guess he's the second longest, tyrant, if you want to use the term, dictator in power, short of Fidel Castro.
Pretty much. And, you know, these dictators, whether in Cuba or whether any place, I mean, it's not a good situation to have anybody as a position of a dictator.
No. Well, if you go back to classical times and you understand the role of the dictator, it's a Roman invention.
Well, I mean, for example,
and it was for a limited period of time up until Caesar, whom they voted basically dictator for life.
Right.
But that was all part of the setup to create enough popular pressure to bring about his assassination.
But, you know, I wonder, for example, when is it going to break out in Cuba?
I don't think it's going to break out in Cuba.
I don't know. Bob, you know, human rights violations in Cuba, well, they don't have the best records. I mean, there's one Cuban writer who escaped from this, Cuba, and I cannot remember his name. This guy died of AIDS back in the 80s. And I've seen documentaries and movies about him, and I'm sorry I cannot pull up his name.
I know who you're talking about.
And to read some of his books and the situation under Castro, it was just absolutely dreadful. And even though there is a modicum of social responsibility in that country, I mean, life has not been easy for these people.
No, but how much of that has been a function of the American embargo?
Well, that's politics for you, because, I mean, of course, Cuba with Castro, we had a problem with him back in 1962, and, of course, he had to withdraw and, you know, allow those Soviet missiles to be withdrawn. I mean, it's a whole big...
But, you know, if you look at the history, Jim, every problem we've had with the Cuban regime has been a function of our sort of ham-fisted insistence on our way or the highway. We didn't start out having a problem with Castro. We had a problem with Castro after we decided we wanted a problem with Castro.
Well, you know, Castro was conceived by a lot of people when he came to power as being the second Thomas Jefferson. And then, of course, he coalesced with the Soviet Union, who bought his sugar and who kept the Cuban economy afloat.
Right, but he was pushed into the arms of the Soviet Union by virtue of American conduct.
But basically, Castro was a Marxist from beginning to end, and wanted to get rid of Batista, who, of course, was our toady there.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about human rights abuses. There was plenty of those under Batista as well. The sad fact is that from its so-called discovery by the Spaniards forward, Cuba's legacy has been one of misery.
Well, let me put it this way. Both Batista and Castro have kept Moro prison filled with any people they didn't like.
And the sad thing is that when Castro finds, because we're seeing some reforms under Raul Castro.
Reyes is the Cuban guy's name. Reyes.
There you go. You're right. Yeah, I've seen it before.
Hear his story, it's just horrible.
But there have been reforms under Raul Castro. For instance, there is some private property ownership. Their cigar industry had an uptick because of that. But it's going to be sad when Fidel. It's going to be sad when not because he dies. You know, he's had a long and however you care to describe his life. But the moment that Fidel Castro dies, the commercialization of Cuba will begin. And
well,
I dread the day that there is a Starbucks on every corner in Havana and a McDonald's on the other one.
Well, I can see your point, and I can understand what you're saying.
Because capitalism will have no more the tender mercies of capitalism will be as brutal on the Cuban people generally as anything Castro has done. Do you think the rise of capitalism in Cuba, when that eventually comes, do you think that that will permit for the Cubans to continue to have a higher literacy rate than the United States, or a higher a lower infant mortality rate, or a lower maternal death rate? Because I don't. Capitalism doesn't tolerate that, Jim. You know what I mean?
Well, you're right, but I don't think the Cubans are going to allow that to happen either, should Castro, and he will pass away, and so will his cult of personality. I mean, they will have to transition into...
But my fear, Jim, is that the Cuban people will not have any say-so in the matter, because the IMF will move in and try to do what they have done to other so-called third-world nations, i.e., blackmail them out of all of their natural resources, blackmail them out of their commons, out of their patrimony, in the name of so-called economic growth.
You mean the International Monetary Fund?
Sure. And the World Bank, because that's what they do in developing nations. That's why Ecuador is such a stunning little example of pushback right now.
I see. Well, one thing about it is the entire world appears to be in a state of flux, and these revolutions that are occurring in the Middle East, Bob, revolutions have a way of becoming moderate at first, and then, of course, you have a very small cadre of what I referred to earlier on this program as malevolent forces or insidious forces coming in and taking over. And what I don't want to see happen is a worse situation developing than was before.
And that state of flux exists in Egypt, and it could, among other things, I saw a statement that says the Egyptian military, and I didn't quite know how to take it, does not want to open the markets. Well, the food prices in Egypt have not been because of closed markets. It's been because of Wall Street gamblers. But apparently they do want to protect their economies to some degree or another, and yet, lo and behold, give us half a chance here in the West, and we'll be screaming that Egypt needs to be a capitalist wonderland. And I wish I was wrong. I don't think I am. But the Egyptian people will be by far the poorer for it. because capitalism grinds the poor into their they grind their bones to make the bread of the wealthy.
Well, unfortunately, that is correct, and I agree with you there. And you know, what I don't understand is why in the world can't these people realize that the people whose bones they're trying to grind are the ones who really, in effect, make their own existence possible. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do.
I mean, it is in their best interest. It is in the best interest of the capitalist world to have a working force that is treated properly. A working force that does have the right to.
But the so-called great capitalist philosophers, you know, whether it be Milton Friedman or Leo Strauss or any of those guys, monsters, says exactly the opposite. Milton Friedman is very clear in stating that capitalism functions best when the working force is desperate and starving, because the market is all.
But, you know, these people and their great economic knowledge, don't they have the sense to realize that that can only continue for a very short period of time until their own system, including themselves, collapse?
I don't think so, Jim, and I'm not being disagreeable. I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, because what we're dealing with is the old Aesopian fable of the locust and the ant, or the grasshopper and the ant. The ant is prudent and stores up against the dark day, whereas the locust or the grasshopper simply eats everything in sight. And capitalism is the grasshopper. It is based upon endless consumption.
Yeah, but the trouble is, who will consume their products and give them their profit margin? That's what I'm trying to say.
I understand that, but the way they think that they've got that figured out is so-called globalism. So what they're going to do is raise the standard of living in India and China now. That's the new dodge. And they're going to turn Indians and Chinese into capitalist consumers until their wages rise too high, and then they'll go somewhere else, and eventually it'll cycle back to the United States, where our working class will be working for pennies on the hour, and then we'll get the capitalist largesse again. It's an economic Mobius strip that they envision, but the problem is, as far as I can see it, Jim, is that they never take issues of sustainability into account, and they think that they can just somehow or another that the world's resources are simply a bottomless well of wealth that they can tap at will, when, you know, whether it's peak coal production or peak oil production or peak food production.
Well, all these resources are finite.
And yet the very essence of capitalism is predicated on infinity.
Well, that's a failed philosophy, just like supply-side economics is a failed economic philosophy. And why people cannot understand and realize that, well, they just don't want to. It's like you say, they want to just take everything they can, and they don't give a shit about anybody else themselves. And
they absolutely do not.
And, you know, after they're gone, they could give a shit less. You know, it's just like I said one time before. I was at Louis the 15th, Louis Cass, said, "The state shall last our reign. Après moi le deluge.
After me, the flood."
There you go. But anyway, I hope that, I don't see any bright horizon for the union people in Wisconsin right now. And I don't see any bright horizons anywhere. I mean, I hate to be your pessimist on this program, but it all looks pretty grim to me. And it could be avoided with just a basic tenet of humanity and common sense to realize that, you know, you've got a pyramid there.
Right, but the problem in Wisconsin and Ohio and Florida and New Jersey and all these places where this new generation of right-wing thuggery has taken root lies in the fact, and, you know, you've heard it time and again on this program, they want it all.
Well, they can't have it all, and what are they going to do when they have it all? If they have it all, then, you know, then what are they going to do with it?
Onward to the asteroids, Jim.
I guess so, but nonetheless, here's one other thing I want to make. I know you've got other people who want to get on this program tonight. These teabaggers, I still contend, when they started this teabagger movement, well, this is something they tried to use to manipulate. But I think what they are manipulating this teabagger movement into is some type of golem in which they could, by that, be themselves undone. I mean, there's already talk about a coalition between elements of the teabaggers and the progressives. Because,
well, I mean, it's happened. It's happened in the House insofar as they slowed down the Republican drive to reauthorize elements of the Patriot Act.
Could you believe that asshole Speaker of the House last night?
Well, actually, I was busy having a vehicle breakdown. What happened?
Read my lips.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yes. But you know what? The last Republican who said that didn't stay in office very long, and I just hope it stays true for John Boehner.
Me too. I mean, he was up there fixing, it looked like, to have a major anxiety attack. And then he gets up there and marshals up what little bit of courage the man has, and I'm surprised he didn't start crying or whatever. Maybe he's got one of these tear boxes like Nero used to have. But nonetheless, he got up there and reversed himself and said, read my lips. And I thought to myself, buddy, you're going to be reading somebody's lips. They're going to be somebody's lips on your rear end, and they're not going to be there to kiss it either.
Let's hope whoever it is, well, let's hope there's a lot of sharp teeth involved, Jim.
Well, I think that, well, it's a very scary situation right now, and I certainly hope that things will work out for the best. I have my doubts, but then I have my hopes as well. So I guess with me, the glass is half full and half empty. I just hope it's half full when the things come to an end. As far as, well, they won't come to an end, but as far as some type of, you know,
resolution.
Resolution. I mean, Bob, these are not difficult questions to answer. I mean, it's just a matter of looking back and being pragmatic. I mean, that's exactly the basis of my whole political philosophy, is pragmatism. Do you follow me?
Yes. Yeah, you want the system to work.
I want it to work. I don't want to see it to grind to a halt. I don't want to see people in the streets. I don't want to see people being deprived of what is theirs and people having to write letters like Mark did on your program that you read very painfully the other night. I don't want to see that happen. And if people would simply be decent and humane, but of course history has a way of teaching you that they're not decent and they're not humane, are they?
Not some of the elements we're talking about, but I still maintain a degree of optimism about what's going on in Wisconsin, because there are so many elements coming together. I've got a piece here from Michael Moore, and he's taught in it. He writes about. Well, he says, dear high school students, how inspired are you by the thousands of students from Wisconsin high schools who began walking out of class 4 days ago and have now occupied the state capitol building and its grounds in Madison, demanding that the governor stop his assault on teachers and other government workers? I have to say it's one of the most exciting things I've seen in years. And you know what? It is. And you know what? If you students, kids, teenagers will carp and complain about school, you know, it's as old as pissing around about the weather, Jim. But you know what? When it comes right down to it, kids are smarter than we give them a lot of credit, much credit for, and they know that it's their ox being gored.
Right. Listen, I taught school for 12 years before getting into federal service, and I know exactly what you're talking about there. But as far as the situation in Wisconsin is concerned, I glory in their efforts, and I hope that this might teach people a lesson, and I can only hope from this spark will come the flame.
Hear, hear, Jim. Thank you very kindly, and have a wonderful weekend.
Same to you, sir.
All right. Bye now. The philosophical considerations of our buddy Jim. I want to share something with you. Line's open, by the way. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. It's Friday on the front porch. I'm not going to sit here and monologue at you unless you make me filibobster. Not going to do it. A lot of nights on this program, I end with all the lights still blinking from calls I haven't gotten to. If you've got a burr under your saddle or a bee under your bonnet, for God's sakes, get to take care of it, because those things can be painful. Light it up. But many of you know that one of my favorite leisure time activities is the simple act of reading stuff that has nothing to do with this, with current events, with news, with politics. Sometimes I like to just kick back and read something for fun. And I've been on a classic detective fiction kick lately. I've been reading a lot of Dashiell Hammett. I've been reading a lot of Raymond Chandler. Surprisingly, there are not a lot of electronic versions of John D. McDonald out there. And I'd love to get my hands on some of the Travis McGee books. I love those. But I just happened to... Okay, here's how it shook out. As part of a sort of a thank you for what the Horn is doing by way of bringing Dr. Bill's Prism series to the rest of the world, he gifted me with a Kindle loaded with all the texts that will be studied in the course of the Prism series. And I'm reading on those, too. But, yes, I loaded a Raymond Chandler novel on it. I loaded Farewell, My Lovely. And even when I'm out, even when I'm just sort of propped up in bed, trying to relax, hang out a little bit, enjoy myself with some escapist fiction, well, oh, hell no. In Clayton's phone call a little bit ago, he asked that question about how rich does one man need to be? And it's a valid question. It reminds me of that great line from Chinatown.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
Right, you know? So there I am, toddling along through Farewell, My Lovely, trying to figure out who done it. And I run across this. Raymond Chandler, of course, one of the great words. He doesn't get just on a pure... See, this is literature. What Raymond Chandler did wasn't just pulp detective fiction. This is... Listen to this writing. When you listen to writing like this, you know you're dealing with somebody who knows what he's doing. And this is a great counterpoint to the drivel that will be all across America in the form of Atlas Shrugged. By the way, Ron in Raleigh tells me, take from it what you will, Atlas Shrugged will premiere on April 1st. Who's the joke on? From where I stand, it's on the ticket-buying public. But anyway, Raymond Chandler, talking about a rich guy. There ain't no clean way to make $100 million. Maybe the head man thinks his hands are clean, but somewhere along the line, guys got pushed to the wall. Nice little businesses got the ground cut out from under them and had to sell out for nickels. Decent people... Oh, God. Is it just natural that when you read Raymond Chandler, you start sounding halfway like... No, cut off the Bogart. Let's see. Let's go back because I screwed that up. There ain't no clean way to make $100 million. Maybe the head man thinks his hands are clean, but somewhere along the way, little guys got pushed to the wall. Nice little businesses got the ground cut out from under them and had to sell out for nickels. Decent people lost their jobs. Stocks got rigged on the market. Proxies got bought up like a penny weight of old gold. And the 5%ers and the big law firms got paid 100 grand fees for beating some law the people wanted, but the rich guys didn't, on account of it cut into their profits. Big money is big power, and big power gets used wrong. It's the system. Maybe it's the best we can get, but it still ain't any ivory soap deal. Now, I think that book was published, maybe 1947, something like that? 1947, 1948. And already, with the American economy rising from the ashes of the Depression and the boom of the war production years, it was there to be seen because it had never actually gone away. We have a long memory, those of us who care to remember, and it includes John Jacob Astor, and it includes the Rockefellers, and it includes J.P. Morgan. Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does. It includes Andrew Carnegie. And we know the blood that flowed over their filthy, filthy, lucre-covered hands to get the wealth that they got. And no, they didn't come by it honest. One last time, just because it's so damned poignant. Maybe the head man thinks his hands are clean, but somewhere along the way, guys got pushed to the wall. Nice little businesses got the ground cut out from under them and had to sell out for nickels. Decent people lost their jobs. Stocks got rigged on the market. Proxies got bought up like a penny weight of old gold, and the 5%ers and the big law firms got paid 100 grand fees for beating some law the people wanted that the rich guys didn't, on account of it cut into their profits. The only difference now is that it's more out in the open than it was. It's filthier than it was. It's bloodier than it was. It's more rapacious than it was. 13 minutes past the hour, on the way to the halfway point of the program of tonight's Friday on the Front Porch, and we go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Seoul.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Fine. Am I getting through to you clearly?
You're fine.
Okay. I really don't see a future, much of a future for the United States, and probably this is, you know, why probably I left. America suffers from a disease called capitalism. They really do.
Neo-Calvinism, sure.
Yes. This concept of God loves me more.
I'm stinking rich, and that proves God loves me, right?
Exactly, and it goes back to the beginning when the Pilgrims landed in Massachusetts Bay.
Sure, it does.
This country feels it can do whatever it wants to whoever it wants, especially if they are not of the non-Calvinistic faith, or faith, I suppose.
Well, it preys on ignorance, Kevin.
Exactly.
Because, you know what? Any man, and I use man because it was men mainly in the industry, or any woman who was back home trying to eke out a living during the bad old days of the robber barons, there were plenty of brilliant, intelligent people. My own grandfather, I don't think he went past the eighth grade, but he was a fine thinker, and awesome, stunning, do-it-in-your-head mathematician. And he never got rich. He died of black lung. That and a little dose of medical malpractice, but, you know, you'll have that.
Yeah.
But because of the educational disparity between the wealthy and the working class, that gulf is created specifically to make sure that those gaining entry to the wealth class are limited to a very few.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, it's to me, all you have to do is take the state of Florida and look. You know, the educational system in Florida, as someone who lived there for 3 years, and who, you know, surrounded, who, for some reason or another, got exposed to a lot of teenagers, if you don't play football very well, they get you into the military. And they try to get you into the military, especially with the boys.
Mm-hmm. Now, look, go to any poor school district in the inner city of any metropolitan area of the United States. Come into the school district here where I live, where the military preys upon young people. Well, there ain't going to be nothing for you when you graduate here. You might as well join up and we'll pay for your college. You just try to collect, exactly. Sucker.
Exactly. But, you know, it's like going with the union movement, all that. And it's also good with this neo-Calvinism sickness. Unions did a lot to destroy themselves. Okay, in the United States, you know,
some did, some didn't. The law, see, you get the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act in the FDR administration, and that is followed a few years later by the Taft-Hartley Act, which severely puts the brakes on the union movement.
Mm-hmm.
Because the power structure in this country did not want people to be organized. They did not want workers to be organized, and that was no fault. That was no fault of labor. Now the United Mine Workers, for instance, they shot themselves in the feet back in the 80s when Peabody and then Massey broke them like dry twigs. That is certainly the truth. But there's not a lot of places out there where I'm willing to put the onus on a labor organization when you consider that the playing field, such as it is severely tilted uphill for any working person in this country.
Oh yeah. And, you know, but the thing is, even today in New York City, some of the construction unions, if you're not Italian-American, you're not getting in.
Oh, no, that's not to say there's not a DNA test. I know all about that. You know, if your uncle, your cousin, okay, your brother, or your granddad, forget about it.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. That's a major part of the problem. You know, Wisconsin is the home for, you know, closed workshops that only allow a certain, if only if you had the right, you know, skin tone. Wisconsin and Minnesota is the home of that. A lot of that still goes on today. So, you know, I'm not blaming unions. I think unions are a good thing, but you have to recognize, and hopefully it's recognized, if there is a chance of the unions coming back, we can learn from the past.
Oh, absolutely. And listen, I mean, I'm not giving out any passes. The guys who run the unions in many places, you know, I'm talking about the guys who live in D.C. and get limousine to work and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They haven't done the actual work of their union membership in so long, they probably don't remember how to do it anymore.
Oh, yeah. But I also say, you know, to run a union, you cannot really be a nice guy. You know, you got to be as tough as, you know,
let's be clear about something else. I talk to union members from time to time, and I'm not going to name names, but they'll look at me and say, do you know how many members of my local are registered voting Republicans?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Well, it goes back to the ultra-Calvinistic streak that this country has, even amongst non-whites and non-Protestants, you know, is that God loves me more and he's going to look out for me. You know, how can you be a union guy and be a registered Republican, a party that fundamentally...
But you know what? There's bunches of them.
It's like, it's the same thing with, you know, the gay Republicans and black Republicans. It's like, you have to look at them and say, what?
What are you thinking?
Well, I know what it is that Republicans use these individuals to sell, see, oh, well, we do work for you also.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just don't get it because it only works for you. Probably there are like five or six other guys.
Well, I love these right wingers, and I've got an example of it in audio here in a minute. I've got these people. You know, I don't want to raise taxes on the rich because one of these days I might be rich, and I don't want to be paying no high taxes when I'm rich.
Might and if keywords.
But, you know, hope springs eternal in the mind of the moron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's just, I just don't get it. You know, Clarence Thomas, I'm laughing and I'm giggling hard over it. I really hope that he goes under the gallows because, you know, what's going to happen? It's like...
All those white folks he thought were his buddies? See you later, Clarence!
They're going to drop... Yeah, they're going to drop him like a hot potato.
But the thing is, he won't. If you want it, and I had this little moment a couple of days ago, Kevin. If you want to think about, if you want to grieve over what happened in November, that's one of them. Of course, I don't know if Nancy Pelosi would have ever allowed impeachment hearing or an investigation committee to be launched over Clarence Thomas. You'll notice that Daryl Issa hasn't impaneled anything or sent out any subpoenas. Or a subpoena. But that's one of those moments. That's one of those moments worth grieving over because we have a dire need to actually make our Constitution work. You know, these teabaggers talk about I want the Constitution to be the way it's supposed to be, but they don't. Because if they did, they would take this issue of Clarence Thomas not disclosing his income for years upon years, and they would demand that the Republican House of Representatives impanel an impeachment committee and investigate and impeach and try and remove Clarence Thomas from the Supreme Court. After that, we would do the same with Alito and Roberts, who sat in front of the Senate and openly lied under oath.
Oh, yeah.
And it grieves me because I know that there will be no justice for those thugs for the next 2 years and probably not for the next four because I have no faith in our ability to take the House back in 2012. Sorry, I just don't.
Okay, but you know why I still have an element of hope? Is because one thing about a reporter, regardless of how his sentiments are, he hunts like a werewolf for the next story. And there's going to be a reporter out there. Okay, and they're going to dig and dig. Okay, because
but it doesn't matter how much they dig, Kevin, as long as the governmental structure that's in place to deal with, the evidence on Clarence Thomas is airtight, lead pipe cinch, done. And it doesn't matter, because the Congress will not do its job, because partisan politics is the only thing that matters in this country anymore, especially and primarily where Republicans are concerned.
And I just think, you know, it's going to happen also. You have to understand with institutionalized racism to a certain degree also has its benefit to eliminate those like Clarence Thomas. And I just think if it becomes too much of a bee in their bonnet, they're going to drop him like a hot potato.
Well, but the only way that happens is if somebody goes to Clarence and says, you know, listen, it's time to retire. But no Republican is going to go to Clarence and say it's time to retire as long as the fascist, communist, Kenyan Muslim is still in the White House. Ain't going to happen.
All right. I guess you're right about that.
I mean, I'm not trying to be cranky or anything. It just is.
And you have your point, but I just think, you know, it's like that guy 5 years ago, who was a Republican, he was a Bush appointee, he got busted shoplifting at Target.
Yeah, but he wasn't a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, I guess.
And it did not. And secondarily, Kevin, it did not. That situation did not require congressional action.
Yeah. You know.
You see what I mean?
I just think when it. Yeah. When you don't have to write, I guess when you're not of that Bush class, everybody becomes expendable. You know, and
sure.
That's the thing. You know, when you're not of that New England. And it goes back to that, I guess, whatever you want to, skull and bones, that everybody becomes expendable. And I think if somebody keeps on, if certain things become a bee in the bonnet, they're going to be like, you know what? We'll throw you under the truck. We have no problem throwing you under the truck.
Kevin, thanks a million. You have yourself a great, well, it's already your weekend. I hope it's going well.
It is. Having a few farewell parties, so.
Hot diggity. Hopefully there's some very old and lonely scotch involved.
Oh, yeah. Okay, brother.
All right, you take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Kevin calling from Korea. And please, not that we want to sit in sackcloth and ashes and stare at our navels and weep or anything, but that's one of the things that happened in November. The idea, not that it was going to happen, but just the idea that there would be some level of constitutional justice for a pissant thug like Clarence Thomas, it's gone. Because for all of their talk about law and order and the rule of law, and all of that crap, because to them it's crap, for all their talk, the Republicans have no interest in it if the rule of law and the justice is going to be doled out to one of theirs. Now, there'll be lots of talk about rule of law and justice and all that stuff if they can figure out some way to gin up something on President Not Sure. But against one of their own? Oh, no, sunshine. No. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Well, hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, a couple things. I'm going to be posting here shortly. A post called Thunderdome. I suggest people click on it because it's got a picture, it's got a link to a picture that'll just blow you away.
Okay.
It's a picture taken inside the dome.
Oh, I saw that. That's amazing.
Anyway, okay. Now, here's a suggestion for people. Little piece of homework for you guys. Monday morning, you pick up the phone and you call your Congress critters, all of them, and you ask them this simple question. Have you put out a statement supporting the people in Wisconsin's right to bargain collectively? If not, why not?
That's very interesting. And I can't wait to make the phone call to Joe Manchin's office.
That's what I did today. Now, I say I have to admit I caught my Congress critter flat-footed. They hadn't even thought of it. Then I suggested, well, hey, that's the least you can do. The best thing you could do is get on a plane and park your little butt down in the dome in Madison and join them.
Yeah, see less than sunny Madison.
Say, hey, people of Oregon sent me down here. I'm joining you. Woo!
No, you're making me wish I could be there.
Just blow this thing out of the water, because there is a little a factoid that got slipped out today. Getting rid of the ability to bargain collectively, you know what else they would have to do?
What's that?
You would have to recertify their unions every year.
Oh, that's nasty.
Oh, yeah.
Because anybody who knows what the union certification process is like, and Boss Man Wayne has explained this on a couple of occasions, knows that it is a tilted, the playing field's so tilted it's straight up and down. to keep the union from being certified. See, that's another one of those things, Susan, that would have been corrected by the Employee Free Choice Act that Harry Reid promised would be passed by summer of 2009 that somehow or another we're just not talking about anymore.
Yes, I know. But what you need to do is pass the word. They're not just out to stop this. They're out to kill it, murder it, deader than dead. This is, don't let them con you guys about, this. We just want this, to take a cut, so on and so forth. Horse pucky!
Yeah.
Now, here is a little piece of good news.
Okay.
Or at least I think it's good news. Okay. I know what Blair Mountain is.
Mm-hmm.
So do you.
Right.
I know what quite a few union names are. Like, I know the song "What Side Are You On?" I know where that came from. I also know where
the modern rendition of it. The modern rendition of it by 10,000 Maniacs. Natalie Merchant will make the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck. It features prominently in Mary Lynn Evans' documentary Coal Country.
Oh, good. I got to hear that. Okay, there's another song that was done by Woody Guthrie. Woody Guthrie. And it was called My Dusty Road. And that was about another union, pro-union thing. It was called the Ludlow Massacre.
Yeah.
Now, you have to understand that in all these, most 99% of these cases, none of these guys got the ability to bargain collectively. They just got massacred.
So that later on somebody could.
Exactly. Now, and most, you don't learn this in school. You don't hear about it generally. Guess who was talking about it the other day on a national radio show?
Who's that?
Randy Rhoads.
Yeah.
She did a beautiful rundown of the whole Ludlow Massacre. Who did it? Why they did it? How they did it? The whole nine yards. And then she connected it to what was going on in Madison. I felt like cheering. Because she got it. Unlike most of these Republicans who aren't getting it. It's not about money. It's about rights.
Yeah. It is. And that's why I said that maybe Wisconsin is different, Susan. Because there's nothing esoteric. And I don't mean any disrespect by saying that protesting the war in Iraq and Afghanistan was esoteric. But there's nothing esoteric about not being able to feed one's families anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's as personal as a punch in the nose.
That's what it is. It's a gut punch to working people in Wisconsin, what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. They're saying, you get to go back to the company store. To me, that's what they're saying. You go back to using company script, and screw you. And if I was a teacher, and my daughter's a teacher, if I was a teacher in Wisconsin, I would be down there. If my daughter was teaching in Wisconsin, I'd be down there. If I lived in Wisconsin, I would be down there. The hell was having somebody related to me who was a teacher or a firefighter or anything, I would be down there.
Hear, hear. And that's why I'm so glad that Rick Smith is going to be there because, again, Rick Smith is a union member and Rick Smith walks the walk and talks the talk.
Now, here's another question we need to start asking. Anytime people... like O'Reilly start in on the people in Madison? He needs to be asked one question. Are you or are you not a card-carrying member of AFTRA?
Bingo. Absolutely.
Will you tear up your card?
No.
No. Then he can't work.
Well, not just that. He'd be a fool to. I mean, there's a reason you join a union.
Yeah, because he gets really good money. And it's stupid. You know, they're doing it because of strictly to get political power in the next presidential election.
Sure.
And that's all this is about. This is about political power.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Well, I'm going to be making that phone call on well, Monday's a holiday. Or at least it is around here.
Yeah, it is where I am too. Make it, it is federal holiday. So
yeah, I'll be making it on Tuesday then.
So
because it's going to be real interesting for Joe Manchin, because Joe Manchin achieved a lot of his power in West Virginia by learning not to screw over labor.
Huh? Well.
But there's something interesting here, and I just touched on it, and I want to reiterate it. You know, Republicans have never had an original idea to call their own, at least not anything legitimate. And I laughed out loud the other day when I saw a picture of Scott Walker standing at a podium with a sign on his podium.
His name is not Walker. It's Wank. It's Governor Wanker.
Yeah, okay. Right, exactly. Yeah, he's busy looking for camels right now, like I said. But the sign said, Wisconsin, open for business.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, why, you thieving little bastard. You know where he got that?
Yeah.
Stole it from Joe Manchin. That was his first gubernatorial campaign slogan. West Virginia, open for business. And frankly, there is not a lot of difference. There's not a lot of difference, Susan, between Joe Manchin and Scott Wanker.
And I think they both stole it from Silent Cal.
Oh, Jesus, maybe so.
If I'm not...
you just had to drag Silent Cal into Friday on the Front Porch.
I'm sorry, my mind is a load of trivia.
Well, Susan, good talking to you, dear, and we will talk again soon.
Give my best to Agnes and...
I sure will. She's off taking care... She's off gone to take care of... or help take care of the grandbabies for a couple of days. So we're... I'm bachelor dadding here.
Oh, I bet you're having fun. Give my love to Wayne if you talk to him.
I sure will. He'll be glad to hear from you. Okay.
Okay.
Bye, Susan.
Bye.
Bye now. And we'll get to it. We're only a little over halfway done with Friday on the Front Porch. Keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, wow, that business in Wisconsin is... fantastic. I'm like, apparently I read an article, I can't remember where the Republicans there were like in shock by the amount of people. So once again, they're buying into their own rhetoric. You know what I'm saying? And it's sort of like, listen, it's a wonder this shit ain't happened sooner. And, it could. I don't know where it's gonna, I don't know. But I really do believe that the sort of Egyptian thing, maybe I can just hope, is having some sort of effect. I bet there were a few signs.
Oh, there are. I mean, I've already seen them. There's signs that I saw one school kid holding a sign that said "Walk like an Egyptian."
Yeah, no.
And this is in Wisconsin. Another sign: Egypt equals 18 days. Wisconsin equals ? Egypt gets democracy. Wisconsin gets a dictator.
Shut up! No, but so it's because it's. I mean, it's just sort of so fortuitous. Because, Americans' attention span is like zilch, but everyone knew what the hell happened in Egypt. And you don't have to be a political scientist to see that what you do equals this, and there you have it. And Wisconsin, I guess, is their petri dish, but that's a pretty wicked state to attack with its long history of labor. And I understand that a lot of them people who are protesting are like, you know, Tea Party people and other Republicans, because it's like, oh, shit, they really shitting in my sand pit here.
Yeah, all of a sudden the slogans, and I mean, is there? Do you think there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance, a little bit of a disconnect going on for those protesting teabaggers? I mean, I welcome them, you know, I want them to be there, but, you know, is there that sort of come to Jesus thing happening? Go, wait a minute, I'm a registered Republican.
Yeah, one.
Republicans are doing this to me. I just saw a post where apparently the small business community is turning on Governor Walker.
Well, I mean, the thing is like, once again, that poor state was just inundated with, you know, the sort of bought speech for the election, you know, sold a bill of goods like every Republican utterance. And so if they start acting on their horrific agenda, which they're doing, most Americans are like, oh, no. You know what I'm saying? This is not what they believe. Now, you know how we've talked that, you know, people are much more liberaler than they think. You don't need to use the word liberal. But they adhere to that, because who don't want to work just 8 hours a day? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, who's in favor of that 72-hour work week?
You know what I'm saying? It's just sort of, I mean, who don't want unemployment insurance?
Right, because I think it's a little bit disingenuous to think that there aren't any teabaggers amongst the 99ers.
Right, so it's just kind of like, but if the Republicans are going to sort of do what this idiot's doing and overreach, good luck to them, because, you know, I was, like, in a state of shock when I saw 30,000 plus. I'm thinking, doing my eyes, like, you know, what? You know, because we're so beat down and, like, just shaking our heads about when are these people going to step up. Obviously, there is a limit. I guess we're looking at
it. And Scott Walker done found it.
I guess so. And it's just kind of like, my biggest thing with it was, like, it has to continue day after day.
Yes, they cannot go home. They cannot go home.
If they want to continue with the Egyptian model, that's one thing we need to take away from that. But also, if you combine it with the sort of inherent ideas, no matter how lost they are, of democracy, you know, we got a winning combination here. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Because it don't take much for people in the know to galvanize all them people, which is what seems to be happening in Wisconsin. So I'm sort of, but what I'm telling you, though, is that everyone's always a step behind. Because where was Obama? It took that fool a while. I was like, damn, you came out quick, free Egypt, hello. And did he finally come out a couple of days ago or what?
Yeah, he said he pretty clearly condemned, to the extent that he clearly condemns things, condemned what was going, you know, what the Republican Party was doing.
Well, no, but somebody probably kicked him in his ass and said, hey, dude, this is attacking our money base. You know what I'm saying? Because that's exactly what it's doing, you know, beyond messing with regular people's lives. It's attacking what's left of the non-corporate foot soldiers of the Democratic Party. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, can I point out one thing, Sandra, and that's this, and God, I guess I'm just a nattering nabob of negativity. Somebody pay $5 to Spiro Agnew's estate or something for that. But the struggle in Wisconsin is not a struggle for more of anything. It is a desperate struggle.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's a desperate struggle to maintain the status quo.
Well,
what frustrates me out of that is we had an opportunity with employee free choice to advance the rights. Right now we're just treading water to keep our chins dry.
No, and I, you know, and it's disgusting because, you know, I lay some blame to the Democrats when they had all three branches being so myopic and walking on eggshells because of whatever, the right wing noise machine. You know, they don't have no sense to power shit through. Also, we see who Obama's beholden to, from the beginning was the Wall Street people. I mean, you didn't want to believe it, but if you look back now...
Kind of hard to hard to avoid, isn't it?
Well, that's what the only reason that, you know, some of the more progressive people-sponsored measures didn't get full attention. You know, he spent all that time on that health care debacle. And now you got people desperately trying to hold on to what little they have. But because there's a lot of Republicans in some of these unions, it's just interesting to see because you don't get that many people turning out. That's a lot of people for the U.S. at this point in time.
Well, for one state.
I'm just saying.
But I think the telling factor is that the only for-profit media coverage of it is coming from MSNBC and, of course, Radio Rwanda for purposes of describing it as a... you know, a horrible communist, fascist, socialist uprising, blah, 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 you know the drill.
Yeah, but I...
And they're ignoring... The for-profit media are ignoring this almost as well as they ignored the massive protests in advance of the Iraq War.
Oh, no, it's really disgusting, and it just goes to this idea that, Americans are so petrified of not only, you know, what little government we have, but this new partnership between the government and the corporate power. Because, you know, excuse me, but the airways are supposed to be the people's. And the fact that we can't get a look-see at a labor rights struggle is absurd. It's absolutely outrageous because everyone mostly works in this fucking country. And you're telling me that we're not allowed to see that force in action? And we're supposed to have control, you know, have some access to the airways? You know, so it just belies just how undemocratic, you know, this project-based country has become.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. This is... But then again, we got to ask ourselves the question... would the for-profit media and the corporations that own them want us to see this happening? Because, you know, I joke about our listeners behind the cornbread curtain. You know, you don't want anybody getting all uppity down south or in the Midwest or any of those right-to-work states. Because if this works, and see, I think this is part of the calculation, Sandra, if this works and the people in Wisconsin get to maintain status quo, then some of the folks working out in those right-to-work states might think, it worked. It worked for them in Wisconsin. Maybe we ought to do the same. And the next thing you know, the right wing and the oligarchs and the plutocrats and the kleptocrats and the Republicans, they got a problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's just, I don't know. I don't really, you know, like I said, I'm inclined to hold verdict on it because there are so many negative forces, and the media being a huge one, in light of what this country is supposed to be about. You see what I'm saying? I would completely agree with you about them saying we can't see it, except for the fact that I thought we were in this sort of, you know, democracy. You see what I mean? Now, if we're operating from a point where this is just a corporate state enhanced by a police state, then, you know, I need to view it a different way. But I'm assuming that we still have some sort of polity here. You know what I mean?
That's about all you can do.
You know?
Well, I mean, no, really. Otherwise, it's time for the warm bath.
Well, and it's just, but so I want, you know, I'm really, and don't get me wrong, I think this is fantastic, and I think it's more fantastic that some actual Democrats are saying, oh, shit, let's go. Like, actually showing some solidarity.
Well, look at them walking out of the Wisconsin State House so that they can't act on the bill.
That's what I'm saying, and it's just kind of, that also is really, you know, heartwarming to see, and I just think this idiot, and speaking of the media, that governor is getting interviews every day on CBS, and you see what I'm saying, all over the show.
Right.
And it's just kind of like, that's the thing that people need to make connection to, but I don't know how they can because we don't really have a reference point of media criticism. We can barely critically think at all, let alone say, oh, shit, look at Joe Bob. He's on TV here, and there's no response from the all the thousands in the street. Why is that?
You know,
you can't even get that kind of analysis, you know?
Right, and just the blatant, sickening disinformation and right-wing spin is enough to make you lose breakfast. I happened to be driving around today, and I heard a soundbite from some Wisconsin Republican legislator saying, I think it's just a crime the way these Democrats and these teachers are depriving our poor little school children of, well, I'm making him a redneck, but making our poor school children not be able to go and learn to read and write and stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, but see...
You know, you stinking hypocrite.
It's just tired because part of what they're doing, I think Jim mentioned it, is the sort of, you know, in lockstep with the Gates Foundation and the Waltons and all these other creepy billionaire foundations who are trying to destroy public education. This works in that little plan, too.
Sure it does.
Sorry, I'm not a fan of the Gates Foundation. I find it very disturbing, and they seem to mull over things, and if it don't work, they just sort of leave it in tatters. And you never hear about it again. They move on.
Well, look what happens when you take experienced teachers, Sandra, and you start canning them, because that's part and parcel of it all. You know, you want to get rid of the people that cost more. And so you've got inexperienced teachers, and you've got them in a public school system that, oh, look, you've apparently decided you want to have it fail. That's all this is. This is a concerted effort to fail out the school system. You know what freaks like Neil Bortz call government schools, as if everybody was going to school and standing up, wearing little red kerchiefs and singing the Internationale every morning. This is budget business. That is used as the catalyst for long-standing right-wing goals and aims and dreams and ambitions of killing out organized labor, breaking every last piece of the social safety net. And you know what? Public education, to me, Sandra, is part of the social safety net.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's incredible because, I was reading about this school called the Key Learning Center, which was the first Gardner, I don't know if you know anything about this multiple intelligence stuff.
No.
It's just sort of how people learn. You can learn spatial, introspective. There's eight intelligence that we have. And it was written in 83 by some Harvard educator. But anyway, they put these theories to practice at this charter school in Indianapolis. And of course, the student body is like 73% in poverty, and with this program, they've been graduating 88% of the students, and 91% of those students go on to some post-secondary school. Now, you don't get any kind of numbers like that in comparable public schools that are subjected to the Leave No Child Behind compliance bullshit, right?
Right.
But guess what? This school is being forced to comply with No Child Left Behind this year.
Yeah, because we can't be having that success stuff.
Right, so it's just kind of like, don't tell me nothing about your measurement fetishes and all this other shit they do in school and say that it's trying to educate kids, because it ain't. It's a bunch of it's a load, another way of turning over a huge swath of our commons and public sphere to hedge fund people and whoever else.
You know, that's why that one line from the 1947 Raymond Chandler novel just leaped off the Kindle at me.
Oh yeah, and also my other favorite one is that Jeff Gould, I hire half the working class to kill the other half.
Oh yeah.
That one is just like, yo, along with Mellon, liquidate, liquidate, liquidate. I mean, there's so many of these horrific characters in history in this country, and they all are on the right.
Yeah, isn't that funny? None of them wind up being on our side, the problem causers.
No. I mean, the last time you had anybody of interest on the Republican side was, I think you were talking about it, people who were involved in Reconstruction, making life hell for the Southerners for a minute before it all went.
Yeah, for about a minute.
until the system of
Look who stepped in to make that go away. It was not Democrats.
Right. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, anyway, on a up note, though, I am well pleased with this, but I don't know. I mean, so did they try to pass the bill today? I've been busy, so I haven't.
No, they couldn't. They couldn't.
So they still couldn't because they didn't have the quorum, right?
Yeah, the Senate, they have to have at least one Democrat to get away with it.
Right, and, okay, so they gone.
Yeah, they bugged.
Shit, you know, and so,
Which means that this extends, which is why Rick Smith is getting on his pony and riding to Wisconsin tomorrow night and will be broadcasting live from Wisconsin Monday night.
Well, you know, I listened to the Rick Smith show, you know, so I realized you can download it, so I, you know, listen to it like that sometimes, and I can't believe some of the bills that they trying to creep through there, those right to work type bills. God, that's like death, those sort of,
Yeah, and that's, you know, if there's anything that may be getting neglected a little bit, And if I'm part of the problem, I want to stop being part of the problem, is that Wisconsin is not, and we just got to drive it home. Wisconsin is not an isolated incident. This is part of a nationwide effort. It's part of a nationwide series of talking points that have been going on for the last year. And I don't know if people heard it and thought, well, they don't really mean that. You know, kind of like eliminating abortion. They don't really mean that.
Well, of course. Yeah. And the sort of suppressed turnout on our side, you know, didn't really help matters if you, you know, want
right.
to discuss that. But I still blame the Citizen United thing. I think that has unleashed, you know, just something just horrible. And the next election, I'm just, you know, who knows? I have no idea, but I just want to add one thing about the state situation. You know, President Not Sure had the opportunity to help the states out when they crafted the stimulus. And I know that they had some money there for some bonds and stuff.
Right.
But everything is always down under with this fool. They should have been overt in their help to the states.
That's what I'm saying about things like employee free choice. The fact that we are, that people in Wisconsin are engaged in the struggle of their lives merely to maintain status quo, the only reason you wind up in a struggle like that, Sandra, is because your leadership is not out there pushing forward.
Right, and also, is Obama still going to be trying to be conciliatory and meet these people? I mean, what is it going to take? Is he looking across the horizon and seeing this bullshit? Is he going to turn around and go have lunch with Mitch McConnell and try to craft some backdoor deal to annihilate Social Security? I mean, I don't trust Obama no more. You see what I'm saying? I don't trust him. I don't see him as the sort of...
This entitlement reform BS makes me not very trusting either.
You know, if anybody, any kind of Democrat with any kind of stones would have used this opportunity to be on TV saying, oh, no, this is not happening. This is what the Republicans have planned for every state and name each one. Use the bully pulpit. But no.
No, well, but that's what you would do if you weren't engaged in the politics of fear.
Well, because I'm just like, what is it going to take?
Because he's afraid. He's afraid, Sandra.
Right. Well, excuse me.
You know, Glenn Beck will call him a fascist, communist Kenyan again.
Well, no, but and it's incredible because we need from top to bottom, you know, support on what's going on in Wisconsin. You know, I don't know if other leaders have like stepped up at all.
Well, right. It's what Maura said. Why isn't every local in this country putting out, you know, got somebody standing on a street corner saying, we support the workers in Wisconsin?
Yeah.
You know, we need that. That needs to be happening in Beckley and Charleston. It needs to be happening if there's union workers in Alabama and Mississippi. Just putting it in the public consciousness.
No, it's incredible. And, did you hear that they defunded Planned Parenthood?
Oh, my God. I watched a little bit of the sound of the video of that so-called debate. And it was just another reminder for me, Sandra, of the fact that, you know, if you're dealing with an honest opponent, and having a discussion about what's right and what's wrong, that's one thing. And you might be able to come to some sort of reasonable consensus. But when the other side is advancing their arguments by telling outright lies, you know, why? Because it was there. I've got the audio of this creep from Texas saying, well, why didn't Planned Parenthood do something when they saw that there was criminal business going on in their offices?
Oh, God.
When Planned Parenthood ran to the FBI.
The sort of, yeah, it's incredible. But see, once again, you know, if you, I know this is a bit esoteric, but if you look at France also has, you know, a president, you know, where it's elected separately, like we do.
Yes, Sarkozy.
Right. And that man uses that position nonstop, you know what I'm saying, as a bully pulpit to get whatever horrific neoliberal plans through.
Right.
He was the reason why they went ahead and upped the retirement age at the end of the day. So what I'm saying is that Obama is even in a more of an isolated position to utilize it. And I hate to keep coming back to that because I know it takes what's going on in Wisconsin. But, you know, I'm just so angry at the fact that when people are doing it, where is he? He's nowhere to be found. He's at, what, the Chamber of Commerce or something? Having lunch with Diamond?
Don't. I know.
Anyway, so I'm just, you know, I don't know. I am really quite pleased about that. And the Planned Parenthood thing, I hope that they can stop that in the Senate.
Well, that's the nice thing. It only takes one vote to stop it in the Senate. The question is, do we have the one person with the guts to cast the one vote?
I would think that Al Franken would be someone to put pressure on for something like that.
Well, I would think that it's not even going to pass muster with, you know, those two laughably, allegedly moderate.
All these people are idiots. And also, you did mention, I don't know who you were talking to, but you mentioned Thomas. Listen, what is it going to take? If that was Ginsburg, who was at some secret, oh, let's save the fag meeting, they would have brought her up on impeachment by now. Am I wrong?
No, you are 100% correct, and that was the thrust of my argument.
Well, I'm like, because this fool, every day it's a new revelation, and the bitch ain't spoken in open court in 5 years. That in itself is enough to run his ass out. How you not speaking in court? When that is when the people can see the business of the court. You have nothing to say?
And and that's the sad thing. There won't even be an investigation Slappy Thomas. There won't even be an investigation.
But he is so slimy. I mean, I know he didn't break any laws, but, you know, by not revealing, you know, the income of his wife. But that is so slimy, you know? It's incredible.
It's stunning, and
yeah.
It's not like it's new. I mean, it went on for years.
Well, hopefully that bitch will drunk dial somebody else soon. You know.
I love the way you think.
Oh my God! Anyway, okay, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, you have a good evening, Sandra. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye now. I can hardly believe the weekend's here, even though this is Friday on the front porch. It's, you know, I'm still getting off island time. Even though it was kind of warmish here today, I heard that poor little robin sing. Even so, I get it. I just need me an island with good internet connectivity, right time zone. This could happen. Yeah, who am I kidding? I'm gonna stay here in the sacrifice zone and help fight the fight. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, come down well there, Bob. What's going on?
Hey, what's happening, Spike?
Well, I just want to say, first of all, you mentioned before that slogan that Joe Manchin had used with Open for Business.
Yeah, Open for Business.
That was also a title of a popular adult film, and in both cases, lots of people get screwed.
Yeah. I can always count on you, you know that?
And if you want to hear more of my juvenile, politically related Beavis and Butthead material, if you go to Twitter, at BonerSconey, that's my parody account for Silvio Berlusconi.
Gotta spell it.
BonerSconey. S-C-O-N-I, Boner Sconey.
Okay.
Lots of references to Silvio Berlusconi, making fun of him and having a lot of fun connecting him to all sorts of things like Jersey Shore and things like that. It's really, he's just the older version of them. But you mentioned the Kindle. I just got one from a friend as a gift earlier this week. The big
Yeah, nobody will admit to buying one, apparently.
I didn't buy mine, that's for sure. I don't have the money to buy. I don't have $200 to spend, but what I love about getting it for free is the most expensive one comes with the 3G free wireless internet. And I've been kind of having a field day using that when I go places for wireless internet, since I don't spend the extra $20 a month for a smartphone wireless internet. And although the browser crashes a decent amount since it's not really a computer, it's still nice to not only get it for free, but now I have free access to the internet with it, which is a good way to take advantage of their need to try to sell stuff via the internet and downloads and things like that. So it certainly has a good purpose for that. The only things I've really paid for is a couple of newspapers that you can't really find stuff for free on, international stuff, mainly a Japanese, English version of a Japanese newspaper, which is sometimes a little difficult to find some of that stuff translated on the web easily. So that's nice to, and it's not even expensive to do that one. It's 50 cents an issue when you want to get it like a normal paper. And I'm such a baseball dweeb. I love Japanese baseball, so it's really hard for me to find in a timely manner English translation of what happens in games. All I have to go by generally prior was box scores. So now for $6 a month, I can actually read, you know, in a timely manner, reports on the game. So I can.
And, of course, we've just passed here in the U.S. Pitchers and Catchers Report, which I think should be a national holiday.
Well, when my father was still alive, we'd get a countdown for about a month and a half, at least, leading up to pitchers and catchers. Sometimes we would get a countdown from about mid-November to pitchers and catchers from him. But, yeah, it's nice it's back. I wish this was a World Baseball Classic year, because I love international baseball competition, and it stinks we have to wait every 4 years for that. I want to see the best of Japan and Cuba playing now.
Yeah.
Those are the two of the best countries in the world at baseball. Not us, but Japan and Cuba. And South Korea has become pretty decent as well of late. But, speaking of sports, I write about IndyCar racing. And I wrote an op-ed this week because of a proposal that came out of the House from a Democrat in Minnesota about ending DOD spending on advertising and auto racing. And it's insane the amount of money the Department of Defense spends on advertising and auto racing, where the rough estimate was $100 million over the last decade in NASCAR. But I think that's a real low-ball number, because they've spent $30 million in 3 years in IndyCar racing, which is a smaller TV audience. One car, that's it, not numerous cars like in NASCAR. And, generally sponsorships are less money in that series since there's lower ratings right now. So I can only imagine what the Department of Defense, your tax dollars, has spent in NASCAR, which I might add, I mentioned this in my op-ed, and I'll say it again, what I find most interesting is that NASCAR seems to be the biggest recipient of wasteful government spending, between the DOD advertising there. Jack Roush, earlier this year for a while, had the Department of Commerce handing him money for the 2010 census, and that car hardly got any camera time on TV, so that was really wasted government money. And yet these are the people that keep talking about, less government, less taxes, we're taxed enough already, vote Republican.
Yeah.
But they can't wait to fill their pockets with government welfare for the rich.
Sure.
Cut it off from the poor. But boy, oh boy, these millionaires need the help. Rick Hendrick really needs more money, including Jim Harbaugh, who's one of the backers of the Panther team, who's getting this money. They're getting government money hand over fist. They could have, when people give me this talking point, it's to support the troops and the families. Well, these people can afford to do that on their own. They don't need government to pay them to do it.
Well, that's the... Sorry. But that's in the Jerry Jones builds a stadium the category for me. Why do taxpayers have to build these things? And then pay a home mortgage level price for a decent seat.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why at least the one thing I'll say is it's a lot of things ultra right wing and about the world of racing, but at least on the upside, try to name one major racing facility that was built with taxpayer dollars like stadiums and arenas are for the, you know, the jock sports.
Yeah.
Although some of them have taken advantage of tax credits, but that's okay because that creates stimulus for the economy. When Pocono Raceway took advantage of the tax rebate to build solar panels and built a solar farm, that was good on many levels, and that's not receiving the same type of treatment as what went on in New York with the Mets and Yankee stadiums, especially the Mets stadium being built to cater to the Madoff crowd. I'm glad my father is no longer alive to see what has happened to the New York Mets organization between the fact they've been running to the ground baseball speaking wise, and it turns out that organization was essentially an accomplice in the Bernie Madoff scams. Al Davis is the epitome of the rich who just feel they're not rich enough, and what he's done in the years he's owned the Oakland Raiders, from, you know, moving them from Oakland to Los Angeles because he wanted a better place in Oakland. And then he went to the Los Angeles Coliseum and made them spend a ton of money, and then still wasn't satisfied and moved them back to Oakland. You know, he shafted two Californians at the same time.
Yeah.
And he also, at one point, the ego on this guy, he's the greatest egomaniac in football history, worse than Jerry Jones, when he started selling merchandise, and he wouldn't even cut the NFL in on the deals. He wanted the money all for himself, even though he was an NFL franchise, and part of the deal is, you know, when you get a merchandising deal, you got to give a little share to, you know, the godfather of the NFL. And he at one point was like, yeah, no. When I sign these deals to make jackets and hats, no, that's all my money. So in world of, well, it's the world of any corporation. Sports is a corporate world. The greed is just insane. The Ian Rand mentality runs.
Yeah, aren't you just itching to watch the movie now?
Which movie?
The Atlas Shrugged, coming out on April Fool's Day.
No, because actually seeing her being interviewed in 1980 by Phil Donahue on YouTube was all I needed to see. Actually, that's a...
Yeah, just thinking about that's enough to put you off supper.
Yeah, that's actually great YouTube, because first of all, I get to hear how insane she is. But I love the way how Donahue is the greatest interviewer of all time. I don't care what anyone says. There was nobody better at interviewing anybody of any... He could give you a great interview, whether it be a Ralph Nader or the head of the American Nazi Party. I mean, this guy was just... My father used to always say he should have been a lawyer instead of a talk show, because he had such a way of just working people over. And he didn't do fluff like Barbara Walters. I mean, he really got you to say interesting things, whether...
Yeah, not what would you be if you were a twee, no.
Right, right. Whether it makes you look crazy or it makes you look like a genius, you know, he asked the questions that were, you know, tough questions to ask. And that interview with Ayn Rand, when he gets her to more or less admit that having special education is bad because it brings all students down, that they shouldn't do anything special for the special ed kids. Basically, just let them suffer.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Right. You know, very few people, you know, these people who talk about their champions are, won't talk about that angle, but he got her to point blank say it on his own show, you know, on Donnie, he got her to say it on his show. And, yeah, it's scary, some of the stuff she would say. And also, you know, taking her advice on anything involving politics is like asking the family of someone who gets killed by a drunken driver what they should do to the drunk driver. The family of the drunk driver is always going to say life in prison or death penalty, because you're talking to people who are being irrational. Because they've
right, because they are in misery, they are in hell.
Right, and she was part of the elitist. Her father was part of the elitist, rich ruling class when the revolution took place in Russia. That's why she had such an axe to grind. That's why she had no
right, exactly. But you know, I would love to see. I'd just love to see, based on Truth in Advertising or what's left of it, I'd like to see a disclaimer over the trailer every time it runs. This is a book about personal freedom, written by a woman who took Social Security and Medicare under someone else's name before she died. That is all.
Yeah. Government fraud. But, you know, two things real quick before I get going. One is with the unions in Wisconsin.
Well, let me throw something your way before we go to the unions in Wisconsin, Spike. Just had a note in from Ron in Raleigh, who was kind of kind enough to sort of give me a quick little education on NASCAR. He says, small locally owned tracks like Rockingham have been closed down to move races to new mega tracks like Las Vegas, which has a long history of NASCAR not.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, again, that's the France family. They would, yeah.
Well, Vegas is owned by a different group based out of Charlotte, who runs Charlotte Motor Speedway, Atlanta, Infineon.
That's yeah, and Jim also noting, he says, you know, the NASCAR, he sees a nexus between NASCAR and the Pentagon. He says millions are sent to NASCAR as an accession program for enlistment. And it makes kind of sense, doesn't it? I mean, all those big old Air Force jets are flying over the track, and sure.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I went to the rainout makeup race at Pocono a few years ago, when it rained down on Sunday, so therefore the Monday race was like Woodstock. It's free because they have no one there to check tickets. I was wandering around the souvenir trailers, and I was at the Mark Martin one because I like the old school guy. And I was getting a shirt, and there was a guy, active duty Army, next to me. And everyone there was making a big deal because they were some Blackhawks or whatever going in and out with stuff. And the guy at the trailer selling said something about it, and the active duty guy goes, I could give two you-know-what because I see them every day. Who cares? I'm here to get away from this crap. Which I thought was even better, that the active duty people, some of them, they don't want to see the military stuff. They're off from work. They don't want to see work again. Yeah, well, there's a little bit of that. But the union deal, you know, I like that especially the IAFF got a lot of attention, because I think the IAFF is not given the due credit it should really get, in that it's the one public safety union that will not cross a union picket line and will always stand in solidarity with other unions. My buddy is a president of the Easton local of the IAFF, because I have a bunch of friends there, employees of the Easton Fire Department. And they had their convention in San Diego last summer, and the place they were originally supposed to be at had a union strike go down. There was a union that wasn't going to be get their contract or whatever, so they went on strike. So the IAFF, at the last minute, moved their convention, the accommodations where everyone would stay, because they would not cross a picket line. And, you know, guess which union you'll never see coming in solidarity for unions in matters like this? The FOP, the biggest supporters of right-wing.
There you go.
You know, and at one time, that was a union that wasn't afraid if the orders came, like in Philadelphia, when I believe it was good old Rizzo gave the order to go knock heads because he wanted those damn union people to stop protesting. The Philadelphia police came in like jackboot thugs and broke up a union protest. That's a union going against a union right there.
Yeah.
And that's just...
Well, and see, that was part of the game in Wisconsin early on, was that all of the stuff that... The main thrust of what Scott Walker was doing was aimed at the teachers' union and some other public employee unions, but he had the support of some public safety unions during the election, and consequently they went untouched in his legislative plans. But even that has sort of gone by the boards, because it's my understanding the firefighters have said, no, this ain't going to fly, because we're going to be... See, they understand. They're next.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a fair union. When they endorse a Republican, they endorse them because they voted actually on that union's favor. Not like the FOP, who's more like the NRA at this point. You know, just a GOP front group, essentially. There's very few Democrats within the FOP, and the ones that are somewhat the black sheep sometimes of their lodges. But, you know, that's the biggest problem that unions are in, is that so few unions have observed solidarity. That's why they've been beaten down like they have. My father, for years, with the International Insulators and Asbestos Workers Union, you know, he talked about that for years, how, you know, what failed them is once unions started just worrying about their own union, they didn't worry about other unions, it went downhill. You know, that was maybe the greatest example of all is when the Teamsters became splintered to the point that the UPS crowd only worried about themselves and not even the other Teamsters. You know, that's when we started, and that's, of course, what the bosses wanted. You know, they want this, everyone against each other. They want.
Well, that's the way it always works, Spike.
Right. You know, that's the free market. That's the free market. Everyone out for himself and, you know.
Right, and desperate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, well, you know, I think you're absolutely right. The GOP will win in 2012.
Well, no, I think they'll maintain the House. And they may get the Senate, but let me just drive this tack again. They are not interested in the White House. Whatever, whether it's Pawlenty or Willard Romney or whatever little freak they nominate, unless it's Jeb Bush, they're not interested in the White House. They don't want to be there.
Well, Chris Christie, I would dare not call a little freak. He's a big freak.
Yeah, okay, he's a big, but yeah, he's a freak's freak.
Yeah, New Jersey has two big freaks in him and also a former Eagle Center, a nitwit Republican in the House of Representatives by a Ford, John Runyon. I don't like John Runyon. Even outside of his political philosophy, which is reach behind your behind, stick your hand as deep in your butt as you can, and whatever comes out when you pull out, that's basically John Runyon's political philosophy. You know, yeah, I just honestly think that the biggest problem is the Democrats have no confidence when they do anything. This last election, they didn't run on all their accomplishments. It was defense, 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 defense the whole time. No, instead of having the pair, the kahunas, to come out and say, yeah, this is what we did. What did they do for 8 years? See what we did? They didn't do that. It was backtrack, you know, defend, and look weak. And now, when you look weak, who's going to vote for you? You know, who's going to vote for the guy who's going to get beat up?
Right.
I mean, that's basically what they looked like. They looked like the kid who gets robbed of his lunch money every year. And that's the problem with Obama. Oh, you know, what? Instead of being strong, what's he doing? Chamber of Commerce. Oh, what can I do to make you happy? Please, just don't punch me in the nose today. You know, that's essentially what they look so weak. You have to be confident. Confidence wins elections. You know, Bill Clinton, as much as I disagreed with him, Bubba can be confident. That's why Bubba does well. You gotta have swagger. You gotta be like Pete Rose when you run for election and believe you can be a winner. Because if you don't believe it, the voters ain't going to believe it. That's for darn sure. And on my way out, I just want to mention that I don't know how many people in the Philadelphia area might be listening to this, but next Saturday in Philadelphia is the Walk for Choice, standing up, supporting women's health care, and supporting things like what I took advantage of, STD and HIV testing for free because you don't have insurance. Since the right wing wants to take us to African-style policies of, well, people will die of STDs and AIDS. Who cares?
Yeah, why not?
That's the free market. Free market will save everything. If you look at the policies of third-world African nations and what the GOP and Tea Party are promoting, that's really they want to turn us into Angola, maybe without the land.
Nah, see, I'm still at Somalia.
I think Angola would fit the Tea Party a little more, personally. War torn, ravished. Everyone hates each other. I think that's really at least that's how they feel. Many of them, the Koch brothers, and what an appropriate name for them. if only
you never quit, do you?
If only the late George Carlin was around for these a-holes, I'll tell you, he could have a field day with them. And I just like to say, not only was George Carlin a great stand-up comedian, he was also a great philosopher.
Philosopher, yeah. Well, a prophet.
Yeah,
George Carlin gets a peace be upon him, too. We'll have to add, yeah, because we always say peace be upon him when we mention the late prophet Bill Hicks. I think there's every reason in the world to add that to George Carlin, too.
I've watched him from the age of 8. My old man was always a big fan. And it was the only stand-up where half his act wasn't jokes and you still loved it. At least I did.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this Dane Cook crap. It was funny, and it made you think. You know, I don't know if we'll ever see anyone as genius as Carlin. Plus, he had a potty mouth, which is perfect for me. there's nothing I love more than some of the dirty lines. I mean, I would be right there with him. The words I know he would use for people like Michelle Malkin today online carrying on how the unions are goons, and meanwhile, people there say the only goons they see are the Tea Party people picking on like elderly protesters and
right.
Stuff like that. You know, Palin. Oh, the words he would use to a T to describe what they are. I mean, yeah. George.
We miss you.
I personally miss you. So I'll let it go. We'll let it carry on, and hopefully things will sometime get better. And I don't know if by the way, a cheap plug. Hopefully in 2013, I'm actually going to try to run to be constable around here, because why should only right wingers be involved in the law enforcement process?
Well, you can always use Hunter Thompson's campaign in Colorado as your template.
In this town, that might win an election. This is a very Democratic town.
All right, Spike, you take care and have a great weekend, brother.
All right, man.
Bye now. Wow, what a Friday on the front porch this has been. Let's keep rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Obama is too worried about how he's going to raise that $1 billion for the next election.
$1 billion.
Yeah, and...
Well, you know, that's interesting you would say that, David, because I just got an email from our buddy Andy in California, and he said, yesterday Obama was running around Silicon Valley meeting with CEOs while the working class was demonstrating their hearts out in Wisconsin, trying to keep a semblance of dignity and respect. Yesterday, Mr. Obama was wining and dining with Cisco's John Chambers, Apple's Steve Jobs, and Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, among other Silicon Valley CEOs. Friends were telling me to look out my window for the three helicopters he was using to skip around the valley. Get this, he met with them to promote job creation. Obama doesn't care about the working class, the poor, or the destitute. This is a trickle-down Reagan guy. He's clearly not on our side. His side is who can contribute the big bucks to his 2012 campaign.
Well, I think the same thing that happened to, I don't know Obama's history, but the same thing that happened to Hillary is happening to Obama when she was a serious protest and activist in college. She quickly, little by little, she started peeling off and becoming more and more DLC Hillary, which brings us to, isn't that something what happened to Ray McGovern?
You know, I heard about that Wednesday night after the show, and then, of course, yesterday we had the Dar Jamal lecture, so there was really no opportunity to talk about it. I'm very glad you brought it up. That's sickening. That is disgusting. I mean, I consider Ray a friend of mine. You know, we had him down at one of the Seneca 2 lectures. He and I had a lengthy conversation afterward. He's legit. And even silence is unacceptable in some circles. It was disgusting. He was beaten and dragged out of a meeting for doing nothing more than standing up and turning his back peacefully on Hillary Clinton.
You know, it's going to be interesting. If people don't know this, but Ray McGovern probably gets the most radio appearances on something on the site Anti-War Radio, which is interesting because the person who runs it is a libertarian, Scott Horton. But then they always have these debates. But it's going to be interesting to see what Ray's take on the whole situation of him getting thrown out, abrasions on his arm and so forth, and just that look at in Hillary's face when Ray McGovern is being taken away. I wonder if she knew who it was, or she didn't even dare look down to see who it was. But to be honest, no lights, so it's not like you could just hear somebody being taken out. So
right
from the stage. So you know that whole thing to me is I'm with you on that. It's sickening the fact that I can only imagine. Well, what do you think would happen, Bob, if that was John Bolton?
Oh Jesus, Fox would be having 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week team coverage.
I mean, that's the hilarious thing about it. I mean, we can't have this what if scenario, like when we start talking about that, because it just shows how much of a fraud the right wing is in general. And what worries me about the whole Wisconsin thing, because everything connects together now, it seems, is that this protest, what people are saying is true. It is a great symbolic and physical action of solidarity. But the problem is that burnout factor. How many days can people stay in Wisconsin without the media kind of pressing that they had for the Tea Party?
Well, you know what? They'd better, by God, stay and not plan on going home. Because this is that where the rubber meets the road moment, David.
Who is going to sabotage this protest? I heard you were saying that they were bringing the teabaggers out. I wonder how many they're going to try to bust out and get their lazy asses on a bus.
You know, it's
I'm trying to think. That I don't think they can get that many. But here's the thing about that is that it only takes a little soundbite to run in the news over and over again.
Well, that's very true.
And speaking of soundbites, our friend Mike Stark did another good one on the Rush Limbaugh show, talking about Wisconsin. So you might want to take a listen to that one.
I heard that Flush Limbaugh, I guess in between chewing up OxyContins for the refreshing burst of flavor, referred to the people in Wisconsin as lowlifes and bottom feeders.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. And Mike takes him to a task for about 2 or 3 minutes. Under the guise and alias of a guy from named Shant. And it's a good one to listen to. But yeah, I did want to mention one thing about the H.B. Gary thing, which you will find funny because it's kind of like a Mike Judge connection, and I don't think anyone else has mentioned it as well. But H.B. Gary, apparently Aaron Barr, was giving rates in his email, and he was bragging about how he was going to cheat everyone with these hourly rates that he was doing. And guess what his sign-off tag was, Bob?
What?
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
Jesus.
I'm making this quick, so if there are anyone else on the line, I want you to be heard and get your piece. But, yeah, I just wanted to say it's good to... Good to have you back, and hopefully this Rick Smith coverage will be good. And you know, people start donating for this month.
That would help. That would help a lot, because as I mentioned, talking to Maura at the top of the show, David,
mm-hmm.
We made it to the halfway point, and we did that like Tuesday night. But we're at the end of week 3 of February, which means that we needed to bring in another, $625? And so we're basically in a $625 hole.
And one last humorous note on the whole thing with the for-profit media. I heard Lawrence O'Donnell is bringing out Zombie Coulter for his show now.
You know, there was an excellent post at Crooks and Liars. It was by Nicole Bell over there, and she does great work. Open letter to Lawrence O'Donnell. Why is Ann Coulter on my screen?
You know, Sam Cedar had a great take on this on his radio show today. He said that this is the mark of someone who needs a desperate ratings bump. And this was the only thing he could think of at that moment. And if you think about it,
God, that's I would like for Sam to be wrong about that. I like Sam.
Yeah, I know.
But I'd really like for him to be wrong about that.
Yeah.
Simply because it's just, I mean, if that's the case, oy.
Yeah, that it probably is the case, Bob. It probably is the case. I mean, you know what's happening with TV, and you know what's happening with radio, and you know, just a shout out to Madison, Wisconsin. There's a guy on radio that I listened to when I was listening to other radio shows that were national, and one of the guys' name is Spike, and he's a hardcore liberal, Bob, and he's on in the mornings, and he takes on a lot of conservatives, and I'm sure he has a lot to say on this, and hopefully we can get the inside scoop from Rick Smith and find out the latest on the ground, because it's obvious they're trying to. Oh yeah, and for people who think that the for-profit media they're not covering it, it's a blaze on the right-wing talk radio, and you know what?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's like not covering it at all, because all they're doing is lying out their assholes.
Well, that and they just want to keep the they want to continue influencing people with this form of false equivalence, and they keep talking about Reagan, and this is just like Reagan and the air traffickers. What they need to do is fire them. That's the line that everyone says. Well, just fire them all. Fire them.
God Almighty.
It's sickening, and it's only going to get
effing morons.
Exactly. I think you summed it up brilliantly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. That was just yeah. Oh, and now now News Ninja Gene is letting me know President Not Sure was in Hillsboro, Oregon today at Intel. Of course, there were 10 or 20 teabaggers there. They want no money for high-speed rail. They want it to go to border security. You know, it's moments like that that you just go, you know, we're screwed.
One last thing, it's to say that, to counter that with Gene, or to respond that with Gene, $1 billion. $1
billion. No, you got to put, come on, David, do it with me. You got to put the little pinky up at the corner of your mouth. $1 billion.
Yeah, $1 billion.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, you have a good one.
All right, later, David. Bye now. Later. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine, and let's do one more before we wrap up for the night. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
I got a few little things I'd like to say.
Well, I hope you're going to say all of them.
Okay. I've heard some kind of interesting things, but a few, you know, here and there. And the funniest one to me, in a way, is one of the congressmen, the Repub congressman, got a bill to eliminate prompters for the president.
Wait, eliminate what?
Prompters.
Oh, oh my God, teleprompters?
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
Jesus. To save money, but he couldn't say how much, so it was knocked down.
You know, we have serious problems in this country, but that tells
do.
You that tells you exactly they're only there to grandstand and play games.
Yeah.
And that is sickening to me.
Yeah. And another thing was there's no Democrats except maybe Durbin sending any support, last I heard. Sending any report support to the people who are protesting.
God, I hope there's more by Tuesday.
And that was last night. I heard that he was the first one. And what I heard the president say, I mean, maybe he said something since, was, you know, we all need to sacrifice something. You know, now they're coming up with that.
Oh, you know, I hate it when I start hearing about belt tightening, because I know whose belt's going to get tightened.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing with this. See, that governor gave a bunch of tax credits to big corporations, and that's why he was using up their money that they had on hand. And they said that if he would do that, they would come down in their demands and all, you know, eliminate that they wouldn't mind about making some cuts in their pay, but not to lose their rights to, you know, to collective bargaining.
Right.
And then another thing that I saw Helen Thomas on Joy Behar's show.
Oh, my.
I hadn't seen her at all since she'd gotten kicked out. Have you?
Just a couple of places, but no.
Well, she's got a job writing. I forgot the name of the paper, but Joy was, you know, Joy's all for her, but she was trying to get her to apologize for what she said about the Israel, but Helen wasn't having any of that. She said that, and that, you know, said my family fought for them, you know, during World War II. But anyhow, she was asking her about, said, first of all, she said, do you think that Nixon was the worst president we've had? And she said, no, said Bush, the last Bush, you know. And then she asked her, what does she think about Obama? And she said, well, I think he doesn't have enough courage.
Bless her heart.
I thought that said a lot, yeah. So she's pretty feisty. I mean, she's feistier than I've ever heard her, but Joy was kind of like, well, I'll ask her next, you know, like her. But she said, well, maybe I shouldn't have said what I did to get kicked out. But she said, I'm not, you know, no, I'm not sorry I said what I did. She said, I just spoke the truth. But, you know, I don't know whether I know agree with her, but I'm saying, you know, I admire the woman.
Absolutely.
And I admire her extremely.
Understand that the whole thing that created the tempest in a teapot over Helen Thomas and over which she was forced to resign, she didn't say what they said she said. It was another bunch of made-up garbage.
Mm-hmm.
She was alleged to have said one thing when, in fact, she said entirely another. And she said it on her own time. She didn't say that. She didn't say that as a representative of any particular organization.
Right. It was her own personal. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's kind of like that woman that got fired, you know, after speaking at NAACP. They misconstrued what she said.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. It was an Acorn hit piece, just like the Acorn hit piece on Planned Parenthood, Juanita.
Yeah, I think one thing she's talking about courage now, they didn't have the courage or decency to comfort her in any way. Now, that woman was just thrown out like an old shoe.
You're right.
And she is an honorable woman. She's honorable. And I don't know if this was all after her, but remember how quick they were to fire who's the guy that they call the czar?
Van Jones? Yeah, Van Jones.
Yeah, Van Jones. And then they fired somebody else they let go. I can't remember in between that. And then they let that woman go. And that's where they kind of met their waterloo, because of what the Republicans were saying.
Right.
See? And I have been saying, way before Obama ever even knew about him running, bipartisanship is for the birds.
Right. Well, the Republicans certainly have no interest in it.
I think that's why the Democrats lost the House. Bipartisanship.
Oh yeah, fiddling around and fooling around and
blah blah blah. This.
Right.
You know, we can't have people talking like Alan Grayson does. He's just so.
Oh, and bless his heart, he was absolutely on fire on the lib boat.
Oh, when I first heard him, I just loved him. His speech about the Republicans wanted for
die quickly.
You know, die quickly. And, another thing, crazy thing, one of the Republicans said that was the worst bill in the history of this country was the medical bill. Obamacare.
Yeah, that word.
Yeah, the worst. But, and then, another thing is I'd be afraid, you know, because they're going to have Kaine to be the Democratic. Same thing he was, you know, the one that took.
Yeah, second verse, same as the first.
Yeah. And also, Obama, you know, the press agent that just retired, he's going to help Obama get elected. Can you imagine? You know what? We end up
too much
with,
help.
Richie and who's the worst? Richie and who's the worst of the others? And then one more thing I wanted to tell you was on the, you know, I love Young Turks, and on there, Wes Clark Jr. is on there quite a bit. I don't know if you've ever heard him.
No.
He's very plain. He's very plain spoken. very. And he was telling about that he was with his parents. I don't know when this was, but he was with his parents, and they were somewhere with the Clintons. And anyway, he said, Wes Clark Jr. said to Clinton, said, what are you going to do about the vice president? Talking about Cheney, all these war crimes and all like that, you know, and said, Bill said, oh, we can't do that, you know, we can't come. And said his parents said, why are you talking crazy like that? And he said, what's crazy about the truth?
There you go.
He's really, really, but he's not into doing politics himself. He was in service, you know. And he said once he did his 4 years, he decided that's enough. But he talked a lot about stuff that went on in service. And also, he's very, very opinionated and very, very left-wing. And he's also an atheist, too.
There's a lot of us. Well, us. There's a lot of good people out there who are, and that needs to be.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's what I'm. I've run into more of them. You know, like.
Well, and the thing is, most of them are atheists, Juanita, because they studied the Bible closely. It's not like they've never heard
Catholic.
The good news. Yeah.
Right. He was raised Catholic. Yeah, but he's very outspoken, and he tell you a lot of interesting things about these different politicians, and also about the wars and so forth. And he believes that we don't need to be taking care of the whole world like we do.
Well, especially by bombing it.
He said today something about, or, well, I saw it today. It's a rerun. But he said that, what we needed was just to have just different people here and there. I can't say the way he did, but anyway, what he was saying, we don't need like a regular army ready to go in and fight. He said what you do is, if you do have to go to war, is you build up your army, you know, like they did in World War II.
Yeah,
and
nothing crazy in that.
We did a pretty good job then. I think we did a pretty good job at that time. But
because we had a national commitment, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing about Obama. I have yet to hear him apologize to us about being ungrateful.
Oh well, yeah, right. Yeah. Don't hold your breath.
I know. I haven't. It's been a while. So. You know, it's sad. It's really heartbreaking.
Well, it is.
But
it truly is.
But they threw away the key. You know, they had what they could do, and they threw away the key. And now it's up to, if you believe in God, that's what I believe, and it's up to Him. We're just going to have to. I just hope the people in Wisconsin will keep on. I'm so proud of them.
It is so critical. It is so critical that they stick to their purpose.
What I thought was kind of humorous, so they played some of the things that they were saying on, or what is it, Rwanda Radio?
Radio Rwanda, yeah.
Rwanda. And thank you to Sandy for that. Anyway,
that is hers.
She's our special We need her in Congress, that's for sure. She, now, see, that'd be the kind of person I'd want. Tell the truth. Gee, tell it like it is.
Yeah, but, it shouldn't be such a chore, should it?
I know. Uh-uh. And it's all, oh, my good friend, so-and-so, we're friends.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't want you to be. I want you to be my friend.
There you go.
But I forgot what I was talking about now, but... anyway, they were a lot of the kids they were saying they were sorry on Rwanda Radio. They were saying they were sorry for the children and not having their teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are out with them. The kids are up there with them.
Right.
So it's a beautiful sight.
But it's all it's always fun to see the right winger. The poor little children, you know, when their routine business is cutting, you know, they don't like school lunch. They don't like school funding. They don't like taxes to pay for school. I feel bad for the children.
Yeah.
That's another one of those moments when it's hard for me to believe in the great big God in the sky, because otherwise, you know, because we're told that he doesn't like lying, Juanita. And that's one of those lightning bolt, you know, the greasy spot.
Well, you know, our whole country is based on lies. You know, like, it starts with advertising. You hear an advertising and you think, oh, boy, that'd be great, especially those nighttime ones.
Yeah.
And it's so disappointing overall. You know, most of it is really downright doesn't do anything it says it'll do. You know, you might be satisfied somewhat, but most of it is very disappointing. And you can think about that, and you think about, why should children want to tell the truth? Why, you know.
And frankly, you know, the children who are participating in these demonstrations and protests are getting getting more of an education than they probably otherwise would inside the brick-and-mortar school just now.
That's what one of the teachers that they interviewed, they asked her, did she feel guilty about not being in school? And she said, well, I miss my students, but so they're getting, like you said, more of an education here than they would be in school. So just hope that things will work out.
Indeed, indeed. Juanita, have yourself a wonderful weekend, dear.
It's going to be worse and worse for the whole country.
I get the real sense that this is a turning point moment. It really is.
Yeah. Okay, you take care and good night.
All right, good night, Juanita. Bye now. Sager Central Florida, that's our Juanita. And it's time to get out of town. It is the weekend. We'll be back, hopefully, Monday, just right as rain. And a little moment about fundraising. We need, with this Friday, we should have been $600 ahead. We're not. And frankly, I hesitate to tell you this, but it is true. Of what we got, of the way that we made up the shortfall for to get us to the mid-February mark, that was five people. And that was two people doing a whole lot. And three other people doing more than their fair share as well. You know, when we talk about $600, we're talking about, 60 people doing $10 a piece. And this program will reach a lot more than that. And remember, that works out to about less than 5 cents per show. $10 a month. And it's what makes possible, I'm proud. I was so thrilled. My God, it was kind of life-changing to be down in Institute, West Virginia last night and hear Dar Jamal talking about the reality, the ignored, forgotten reality on the Gulf of Mexico that was brought about by the predatory practices of BP that is going on even as we speak. We were there because of you. Because, I was able to get gasoline to drive the 120 miles round trip. Of course, as we left, we had a breakdown. I had no headlights. So that meant finding a place to sleep for me and Ferg for the night. And then coming back, waiting, because we couldn't drive in the night. So now I've got to go and find out what's wrong with the headlights on the rusty old red pickup truck. These are the costs associated with doing this kind of thing. We've got a compressor that dropped dead Wednesday night. Remember when I was talking to Brad and the microphone went, well, that was a piece of equipment dying that has to be replaced. These things happen. Rick Smith will be on his way to Wisconsin. I would give anything to be able to say, hey, you know what? I'll meet you there. But as long as we struggle just to do the bills, that ain't happening. It just ain't happening. So we need 60 people by Monday, 60 people at $10 apiece. And we will have made February's third week of fundraising. Okay? Cool. Thank you. Tell you a little secret. And I didn't mention it at the top of the program. Don't get mad at me or anything. But I did a little experiment tonight because I wanted to see how comfortable or un I would be with this. After fooling around with Ustream last night at the Seneca 2 lecture, I thought it would be fun just to see what it would like to. And so this entire program has been live on Ustream. The recording will be there if you want to go and watch it. It's at our Ustream channel. And depending on how you feel about it, maybe we'll continue onward and do it some more. But it's not something I can make a habit of because, I find the idea of one static camera view to be about as interesting as watching cornflakes go soggy. But it is there, and we may try it some more if you're into it. So there you go. Thanks to everybody that makes this all go. Thanks to Lottie, our chat room moderator. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Matt Osborne has a fascinating post up at Crooks and Liars as of yesterday. You'll have to drill down a little bit, maybe to page 3 to get to it, called Mr. President, the Anonymous Hacktivists Have a Low-Orbit Ion Cannon. It's worth your read. Matt does great work. Our op-ed columnist is Reverbo at Cavalcade of Crazy. He'll be back with something new and interesting soon, I trust. And thanks go out always to John Fox, our chief engineer, and to the tireless, heroic Ben Birch. Both he and John have dealt with computer nastiness that, frankly, would have driven me quite mad. And they always do it. And they do it tirelessly, and they do it for all the right reasons. Because they, like I, like all of us at the Horn, think that this is worthwhile. So thanks. Thanks also always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. If you're familiar with via the stories we've talked about, everything that Coal River Mountain Watch has done, you know why I call them what they are. Drop by the website, have a look around, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the way from behind the scrapple curtain in Pennsylvania.